Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about Episode 8, and what an episode. Truly a great episode of Survivor, no matter where in the world you're watching it. And I just absolutely love watching it, and I'm going to love talking about it with my co-host, who I'm now calling the actual Mike, to my Rob. That's the new Brewmance. You heard it here first. Please welcome Mike Bloom. Mike, what's happening?
Shannon, I am so excited. I just came back from the social capital of the world, the coffee shop, and I am jazzed up and ready to go.
Yeah, I feel like, what is the slogan of that? It's like, you can have coffee with my fist. I want to put "with my fist" after everything we say. That's something we now do.
I don't know. You might be veering into the not family-friendly territory with that. But look, I am far from, you know, throwing a stone in that glass house. So you go ahead and do that with your fist.
Yeah, throwing a stone with your fist. See, it works on every level. But we have a great guest to talk about this amazing episode, because when Survivor South Africa gets a little bit crazy, we wanted to bring in someone who has a wealth of experience with crazy Survivor strategy and blindsides and idols. So please welcome in the queen from season 6, Palesa. Palesa, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Shannon. Hi, Mike.
Palesa, it's so great to have you here. And for such a fun, hyper-strategic, fast-paced episode, I feel like we couldn't have anyone better to talk about it with.
I'm glad that you guys got me here, because I'm also getting super excited about the episodes now. There's so much going on, so there's obviously no better platform to speak about it than with you, Shannon and Mike.
Before we get into the episode, Palesa, I'm sure fans would love to know, you know, exactly what your life has been like since we saw you back on the Philippines on our screens a year ago. So what's been the life of Palesa for the past year or so?
It's been absolutely crazy, actually. I think because I've always been in the media industry before going on Survivor, I've always had the notion that, you know, you don't wait for work, but you create work. So because I was on Survivor, I made sure that I worked extra hard to sort of uplift my own, my own personality, my own brand. And so because of that, my life has been literally catapulted from one thing to another since then. And I'm actually eternally grateful to the platform of Survivor. And of course, I've put in a lot of work to sort of uplift my own profile since then. But it's been amazing. Obviously, the fans from all around the world, they've all been so fabulous. And I had an idol auction for obviously the idol that I left with. And I mean, obviously, I'm in South Africa, but it was so amazing to see people from America, New Zealand, Australia, you know, be a part of the auction. And it actually is my idol is in Australia now, because Hunt for Australia won it in the auction.
Okay, well, now I want to see
that. I'm waiting for the big reveal that Shannon was the person who won the idol, and that's how this connection ended up happening.
I wish I was. Can I have it? Whoever you are, please.
No, they actually, the person who got the idol has an international idol collection. So he has a mini museum in his house, and mine is actually part of the collection. I think on Twitter afterwards, I will share that picture with all of you, and you can see my idol amongst other idols around the world.
We need to become friends with this person, if only to figure out who has more idols, this guy or Survivor South Africa Island of Secrets. It might be Nick and Nick at this point.
No, I definitely met that guy at a trivia night in Sydney. I remember because Adam Klein was there and he had Adam's idol, and Adam was super jealous and wanted it back. So Australia is obviously very small in the Survivor community that I have met that person.
Yes, absolutely. And it's great. Just recently, I also got one of my idol clue, and he bought it with the envelope. So he's got it now as well in Australia at the moment.
Okay, well, that's absolutely amazing.
Let's hope it's uneaten at this point, because I know what happens with South Africans and idol clues.
Absolutely. I hope so, because otherwise it would be a disaster if it's back in Samoa.
Well, this episode was obviously the last episode of the pre-merge that we now know that with the next time on. So, Palesa, before we get into the episode itself, what have been your thoughts on this new season, you know, the first Survivor South Africa season that you're watching as a former player?
Right. There's so many mixed emotions. The first time I've watched Survivor South Africa after being on the show, now I get so much more critical about the show, and it almost like I was reliving being on an island again. So for me, it was quite emotional because when I saw them going on the island for the first time, I remember the first time I was on the island. So it's almost like reliving the experience, but it's actually been so amazing so far. And I mean, obviously, we're not blowing our own horns for season six, but I think it really catapulted Survivor South Africa to much greater heights. And we're seeing so much great things happening already on the island. It's a very, very exciting season.
Yeah, though I do wonder, is part of you saying, like, what are these guys doing? They're not drawing rocks. They're not finding idols at tribal council. Like, right, I can imagine coming from such a high octane game that you played in your season into something that's still, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of crazy stuff that happened this episode, but a bit of step down in terms of chaos. I can only imagine how that compares.
Absolutely. I mean, when we think about it, because we have a little secret WhatsApp group.
Yes,
for all survivors,
we love the WhatsApp group.
A group. And we talk about everything that goes on right now in the season. And of course, I mean, because of so many things that happened last season, I do wish that more of the idols were actually from, you know, looking and the game plan. So, you know, we can obviously not just watch and be excited, but we also have a fair amount of criticism for these year's castaways, which is also great to do, especially if you've been on the island.
I love that, because I feel like a lot of contestants get off the show being like, you know, you never really know what's going on out there. I feel like I can't judge people anymore. And you're like, no, I want to judge people more. And that's what we like to do on the podcast. So that's really great for us. But, you know, you talk about, Mike, that there's no one going to rocks, although Nathan did try. And there's, you know, no one finding idols at tribal council. But the other big moment of the pre-merge of season six was that PK voted out Tevin. And while we did, you know, compare Nathan to PK, I feel like we got that moment very eerily similar, you know, right before the merge as well, in here, Nicole voting out Nathan, huge blindside, biggest betrayal of the game, one of the bigger betrayals you'll see. I think for me, I had not even realized, because it wasn't really mentioned on the episode, and until a bit later, I didn't realize he gave her his half an idol, and she's sitting there with his idol. Second time this season that someone has given away an idol only to be voted out by that group. So that is amazing, and I'm sure that move is something we're going to be talking a lot about. I don't know, there's so many people to talk about this move from their perspective. Should we start with Nicole, Mike? Should we start digging into why Nicole did this?
Yeah, I'll give a question back to you and Palesa here. Who do you think made the more nonsensical decision here, Nicole or PK? Ooh. Because you could say that, you know, who do you fault more? PK, arguably, you know, had almost better intentions for the reason why he went after Tevin. He wasn't going after some sort of weird cockamamie logic like, oh, Tevin's weak on the tribe, so we need to get rid of him. But at the same time, I don't know if that makes it better or worse than what Nicole did. But, oh, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this one. This is so, so confusing to me why she would want to do this, especially knowing the signal she's about to send across the bow at her other closest ally, Rob.
You know what? I personally feel that Nicole definitely made the worst decision in comparison to PK, because PK still had allies on the tribe that he was on before merge. He still had a good amount of allies, or even if it was one, but he had someone to bounce ideas off of, and he had someone who he could trust. Nicole doing this, knowing that the person that she could trust the most being Nathan, and voting him off just before merge. And I'm sure, even though they didn't know that the next two or the next day was going to be merge, they knew that merge was coming. And that's the thing about being on the island. You know, you have that feeling that something is coming, and you're always saying, yeah, is today going to be merge? So because it's so close to merge and they know it, knowing that you're going to get rid of someone that you trust the most with no backup, was really a bad decision.
Yeah, like in PK's defense, and I say this as someone who, when PK got voted out episodes later, we were still like, yep, it was that Tevin decision, like really came back to bite him and was never a good move. And even when I spoke to PK in his deep dive, he was saying like, yeah, I pretty much wanted to make good TV. So we're not defending the PK decision, but in his defense, at least he was kind of like swinging with Tony, who had been aligned with him and Verna before, whereas like Nicole is now the only former Saula member who has done this. And I think last week we were talking about Big Bad Saula, the center of this wheel, who were going to run the post-merge, and I really feel they would have done that. Now that wheel is smashed to smithereens, there's no center anymore. It made sense for me, and we'll talk about Jeff and Maba, but it makes sense for Lao Mei trying to get into that power structure and shaking it all up. Really didn't make sense for Nicole, and if it was about challenge strength, this is so crazy to me. I don't really know why, because she had a lot of options. I mean, this ended up being, you know, a 4-2-1 vote. She could have obviously gone back with or without Doral, worked with Meryl and Dante to take out Jeff. She could have tried to convince Jeff and Maba not to make this move without her, because she was obviously really key in that, and just taken out Dante like they'd planned. And then you have fodder on either side. You're either taking out Maba next time or Meryl next time. Then there's, you know, Doral. Then you're probably going to merge. So in a pre-merge perspective, don't know why she didn't feel okay. From a post-merge perspective, I feel she's blown up her own game. And I, yeah, can't make sense of it. Mike, can you help me do that?
Well, I wonder if, you know, we saw in the beginning of this episode a lot of Nate being the go-between for Dante and Meryl and Jeff and Maba. And I feel like he was saying a lot of, yeah, Nicole and I are in the middle. Looking back on it, I wonder if Nicole didn't necessarily feel that way, because she comes out with this pretty crazy confessional about like, I want to stick with Jeff because he's the glue between Maba, Doral, and myself. And it just seems like she just completely ditched Nate, someone who she's been with since the very beginning, in lieu of this new, you know, cobbled together alliance of people that she hasn't really been with until late. It's also odd that she chooses not to take a shot at Dante and Meryl, who were so vociferously targeting her and Rob on the previous version of Ta'alo. Maybe it's hers trying to do her own form of a spit shake and being like, okay, guys, we got to stay strong as a tribe. Maybe that speaks back to her, you know, loyalty and honesty thing that she's putting out there, even though she admits she's betraying that tonight. It just seems like any logic that she has assigned to this decision is just completely illogical. I feel like she just doesn't have a great sense as to, okay, she's essentially making a deal with the devil here and not realizing that if she, you know, she's essentially cutting off her right hand here. And when you go into the merge with everyone else with two hands, having one hand puts you at an extreme disadvantage, especially if you are cutting off the fingers of some of your other allies as well.
Thanks for the like injured hand analogy, considering Nathan obviously has an injured hand. So he can tell you that for sure. You need two hands. But I think that what is really, really key here is just how bad Nicole's relationship was with Dante and what really seems like Meryl. It seems like, you know, Meryl and Nicole have this huge rivalry that we hear, you know, in her confessionals, in the secret scenes and everything, that it's just really, really toxic. I was listening back to our podcast last week, and sometimes you listen to a podcast, you disagree. I was disagreeing with myself because I felt like I was way too lenient on Meryl and Dante, who I said were just in this unfortunate swap position. But you know what? No, because they came out and Rob and Nicole felt so bad about them from that second swap to Arlo tribe, to the point where Rob was telling Nathan to take out Dante, to the point where I don't feel like Nicole ever wanted to work with them. You should not feel so bad about two people you never even went to a tribal council with. So now she probably feels like she can't work with them. Jeff and Maba and Doral don't actually need her vote, because even if she votes with Nathan, it's a 3-2-2, so they're voting out Nathan, so she might as well go with it unless she feels like she can take Doral with her. But if she feels like she can't flip to Meryl and Dante because that relationship is completely unworkable, whoever you want to blame for that, it's probably all of their fault that they had such an incredibly unworkable relationship despite never having voted together before this vote. I feel like that breakdown really boxed her in here to having to take out one of her closest allies, someone brother-sister relationship, gave her half an idol, cried with her on Island of Secrets. I do really feel like this was a key relationship with her that she wasn't able to save here and didn't really seem to try to save. So, Palesa, where do you think she was going with this move?
Look, honestly speaking, I think this was definitely a move that was made from completely an emotional move, as well as a move that comes from paranoia. And the thing that a lot of people that watch Survivor that don't understand, from the people who are on the island, paranoia is actually the most dangerous thing on the island. Really, more than the weather, and more than, you know, the tribe swaps, and more than the challenges, the paranoia gets to you the most, because all the time your mind is going crazy. And afterwards, after Jeff and Maba come through and they sit there by the water well and they tell Nicole and Jurao about, you know, what they feel they should be doing in terms of the Nathan vote off. As soon as they start speaking about her injury, it obviously, you know, she started bringing the tears, and obviously we've got fake tears from her before, but I felt that these were more genuine tears coming from her. And it's because not knowing that what the impact of pre-merge is going, you know, what the impact of pre-merge is going to be. Definitely Nicole will need the numbers of Nathan going into merge, but she doesn't vote from that perspective. And as soon as they tell her about because of Nathan's injury and so on and so forth, she realizes, and because she's had history with Nathan before and when he injured his ankle, it's almost like a comeback from all those times. Like, yeah, he's been injured before and he didn't do well, and now we didn't do well again. So it was really a split second decision that she made. Also trying to build the loyalty with the Jeff and Maba and Jurao, the new crew, and get more numbers in. But she didn't really think it through. And I wish that she had gone and spoke to Nathan and had a one-on-one with him about, you know, time going forward in the game. And I'm not really sure how much either one of them know about, you know, Survivor the game before actually coming onto to the island. You know, for someone like me who also didn't really know too much about the game before going on the island, I think it would have helped if she had more conversations and not just relied on Jeff and Maba saying that, okay, maybe Rob is a good person to vote off because we need to win more. And Jurao should have also come out and said, look, merge is actually happening soon, because he knows this information. And if he really trusted these people and he would have revealed that information, it's so important for you to have more numbers when it comes to the actual merge, and have someone that you can actually trust and not these new friendships that sort of form. So Nicole's decision was definitely a terrible decision, because it came from a very paranoid place and a very emotional place. And there wasn't enough thinking and strategizing from her angle.
I agree that I think that it was a lot of pre-merge paranoia. I think she saw her option as going back to Nathan, but then having to work with Meryl and Dante and giving them a lot of power and just feeling so uncomfortable with that, even though I feel like Nathan could have protected her there kind of as the bridge between them, and he'd been working with them. So I think she obviously would have been okay. And I do think, you know, you talk about paranoia. Well, for me, the best way to quell paranoia, surely, is to have an ally who calls you a sister, who seems so loyal to you, who gave you half an idol. And that's something that I think would have seen her through, not just the pre-merge, but much, much further into the game. So I feel like that was the connection, obviously, that she needed to take. But I feel like we're all on the same page with Nicole's move. I want to talk to you, Mike, about Jeff and Maba, because this is a very polarizing move, especially from Jeff, who we really saw as the architect of that. Online, I mean, it's a big move, so it would make sense. People are either very, very, very anti or very, very pro. So where do you fall on this move from Jeff and Maba?
I think I saw an analogy on Reddit that I'm going to ape here for a second. It's like if you have a very hard math problem to solve and you do it in a really roundabout way, but you get the correct answer. That's what Jeff's move reminds me of.
Yes.
Because I think, yes, Nicole might have smashed the wheel from within, but Jeff was the one who was swinging that hammer. I think if you're talking about from looking forward and really getting rid of the power, you know, the power group within the game that has somehow remained intact inexplicably for the past several weeks, this was a fantastic move. Not only that, you were able to get Nicole to turn against Nathan. Again, we're still not completely sure why, which will definitely, you know, not only are you removing a key position in there, you're removing the glue, even though you've been coined the glue of your alliance, but you're also, you know, sowing a lot of distrust within those allies to avoid them coming back together again, even if they have all the allies in the world. But the methodology he gave to both the tribe and to us is a little suspect because he used the same logic that Nicole did. And as Pelessa brought up, like, it's a little odd. And, you know, maybe unlike someone like Nicole or Nathan, I know Jeff is a big fan of the game. So I'll admit, I was pretty surprised to have him keep putting forward this mentality of like, we need to keep the tribe, you know, strong. He's been weak in the challenges, when I think he could very easily use what Steffi was using with to get rid of Mike, to get rid of Nathan, by being like, he has so many alliances, you know, he has a lot of different relationships going on with this tribe. It just seems strange that not only did he tell the tribe to keep, you know, strong, but he told us to keep strong as well. So I thought, while it was a fantastic decision, arguably one of the, you know, greatest vote outs of the season so far in terms of ramifications and improving your position in the game moving forward, it seems like the logic he used to get there is surprisingly not as sound as I thought it would be.
Yeah, I really enjoy Jeff. He was my winner pick, and this was the first, you know, my winner pick voted out your winner pick, by the way, Mike. So do I win something with this? But he was, I think he played this really, really well in terms of what he was able to accomplish. You know, I mean, obviously breaking up the Saula amigos and getting Nicole and Doral to do what he wanted. And it was a 4-2-1. He flushed the idol, and like what he was able to accomplish, I think, was brilliant. And the whole of last week, I kept screaming like, Lao Mei, why are you giving so much power to Saula and working with them when they're so powerful? And he completely took that away. And his position to me is so much better. We went from a war analogy to a wheel analogy. Now I think it's like crazy frantic voting blocks. And I think that fast pace of the game speaks to a super fan like Jeff, who can manage it so, so well. But I was just aching, dying to see the confessional Jeff, please just telling me you were doing this because Nathan was a powerful player. Like, I was going through every inch of this episode just waiting to hear that, because I actually don't mind it as an argument to give to Nicole and Doral. I mean, clearly it was effective, so you can't really argue with that. And you know, obviously he's a huge ally for Nicole, so he made it more temporary, fed into that pre-merge paranoia that we're talking about. But the logic of the challenge prowess does not make sense at all for so many reasons. The first being, who cares? Like, literally, who cares how you're doing pre-merge? Secondly, they want to go to tribal council. Like, Nicole even says, we need to go to tribal council again to get rid of Meryl and Dante. So they want to go. Jeff seems happy to be finally playing the game after 8 episodes and actually going to tribal council. So I don't know why there was, is it that they really want to win rewards? Like, this is a really crazy, crazy reasoning. I was just hoping that Jeff maybe also said that in a confessional that we didn't hear, that he was a big threat. And then on the Mnet website, I saw his voting confessional and he's like, this is only because of your challenge. I'm like, Jeff, please! I'm asking for anything here. So I completely agree that the methodology doesn't work, but the move itself, brilliant for his long-term game. I think so much of a better position for him to be in these voting blocks, to take allies away from other people, rather than being like one of the many side pieces of the Amigos. So yeah, he definitely got to the right place. And I hope to speak to him one day and hear maybe there was more to it, but maybe there wasn't. So, Pelessa, what did you think about this move from Jeff's perspective?
I think I'm going to go ahead and call it now. You know, sometimes when people do really great things, we're hoping that it comes from a place where we feel it's like beautiful and heroic. But in this particular point with Jeff, I think he really did make a mess in terms of his analogy of the vote, thinking that it was because Nathan isn't that strong at challenges. And I'm sorry to disappoint you, Shannon, but I really do think he actually got rid of Nathan because he thought he wasn't that great at challenges.
He did keep telling me that was why, but I don't want to believe it.
Right. I need you to believe it now, because unfortunately that actually is the real reason. And it's also the real reason why everybody else voted with that particular decision. And because they don't really know when merge is going to be, they feel like maybe they need to be a little bit stronger and try and get through a few more challenges, immunity challenges, and not go to more tribal councils. And unfortunately, the thing is, when you watch Survivor South Africa, and no matter or Survivor around the world, no matter how many episodes you've watched, you're watching from the outside in. So you already know what's good for the tribe. From the outside, when you're watching, you know what's good for the tribe. You know what's good for an alliance. But when you're inside and you're on an island and with all the things going on in there, you're actually making decisions from a point that you don't actually know what's good for you. And even though Jeff won this particular episode, and I completely agree that he won this episode, everything that he wanted to happen definitely happened with no problems, you know, on his side. But his reasoning was off. And there's definitely, I don't think there's any secret reasoning or any underlying greater plan in his decision. So unfortunately, it was because Nathan wasn't strong enough and he was always getting injured. And everyone who voted with Jeff voted from that particular perspective, because they were definitely from the inside out and not looking from the outside in.
Can I ask, because I know that this was the first time that Jeff and Maba had gone to tribal council, and you can tell that, No offense to Maba, but Jeff in particular was really seemed like, you know, he was sitting, you know, legs jittering for the past, you know, 3 weeks wanting to do something, which I think also might have contributed. Mm-hmm. I know that you had spent a long time on Visayas after voting out Mariska, you know, talking about, hey, we're going to vote out Tom if we ever go to tribal council. You know, I know it's not nearly as extended of amount of a time of not voting as what Jeff and Maba had, but is there something to, when you're on Survivor and you don't vote for a while, to that note of paranoia, your mind just sort of concocts these weird ideas and weird plans that you can't necessarily act upon?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I remember when we really wanted to vote off Tom, we even went to an immunity challenge and we said we were going to throw the challenge. And so we had that conversation for a bit and we had made our decision before going on the challenge. And as soon as I got onto the challenge, I remember telling Vusi and Shanae that, no, we're not throwing the challenge. Obviously, because first of all, I'm not that kind of person who would want to throw anything that would be beneficial to me. But also, the decisions are so split second. You know, every time when you have time, when you have time on the island and you're sitting there and you have time to make decisions, that's when, you know, you're sort of calm and you're trying to make your way around it. But when it's crunch time and it's time to actually make those decisions, there's so many other, you know, things that are happening in your mind that make you realize, no, this is not what I actually want to do. So there's definitely a lot of, and I mean, I'm going to say this so many times because this is actually the biggest underlying decision across all Survivor decisions, is going to be paranoia. And it's going to come from an emotional place, and it's going to come from a deprived place as well, when you're thinking, I have to make a decision and I have to make it quickly. And you also want to make decisions that are going to be big and are going to have a ripple effect.
Yeah, this was clearly someone who wanted to play. He told us that while he was not telling us the actual reason he wanted to get Nathan out. You could tell he wanted to play. I mean, look at Island of Secrets. I felt that him saying that he was given the choice of an advantage at the time was subtly overplaying, unnecessary, but he wanted to have fun with the game. And I feel like this has manifested in larger ways in this episode, because I definitely feel like this was a scalp, and that's something that he wanted to do. I think that plays into it as well. But, you know, the reasoning, not good, as we've said, and he worked into a good move. I think he did show extreme skills for the game. I mean, obviously the social connections, and I love that he brought Nicole in.
Don't say that word, Shannon. Dante's already fuming when you say that word.
Yes. You should never be social and Survivor, Mike, of course. But he has the social connections. He brought in Darrell. I think Maba as well was a huge part of keeping Nicole in, even though they didn't need her vote, as I've said, numerically, but really important for them long-term in the game. So I loved a lot of that. He was lying to Nathan's face like nobody's business. He pulled off the blind side, of course, really, really well. But even beyond the bad reasoning, there were some negatives in this move as well that I want to talk about. I mean, obviously, He fought with Dante and Meryl extremely so. There's still two people who are in the game. They're two people that they wanted to get rid of pre-merge, that they wanted to lose challenges to get rid of, even though they were voting out the challenge liability. It just doesn't make any sense. But anyway, they were two people that he wanted to get rid of. He's not going to get the chance to get rid of them. They might well be jurors if it's early enough to think about that. So there's some negatives there. So, Mike, what do you think about kind of the poorer points as well of the move from his perspective?
I mean, the performance was extremely entertaining from our perspective. But, and not to say that it's not a two-way street, considering that I'm sure we're going to get into all the BS that Dante was throwing him and Maba's way
with his
tribal council in particular. But I will say that Jeff was not, you know, for someone who was touted at making good social connections, those are two bridges he promptly burned. It seems like he's fine with that. And maybe that's because, you know, it does seem like if we do preview the upcoming merge later on, it does seem like Dante and Meryl, despite escaping here, still might be on the bottom, considering that I think their lone, you know, connection left of Kubis doesn't seem like he's necessarily going to want to work with them. He would rather
throwing
personally
them under the cool bus already.
Yeah, he wants to be a free agent. So I think that, you know, maybe he just sort of prolonged their execution. And it's not like the points he made were necessarily sound, though I personally disagree that I don't think Dante Merrill were necessarily playing a dirty game. I would personally define dirty game as like bringing in personal details from someone's life and then, you know, going against them. Like if I said, yeah, I'm going to swear on your daughter's life that I'm going to, you know, not vote you out and then vote you out. That feels a little dirtier than saying like, yeah, we're going to keep the tribe strong. Let's vote out, you know, Jeff and Maba because they're not contributing. But he put up a great fight. And really, this was his coming out party from a character perspective. I'm super intrigued to hear from Palesa's perspective on this, because you very memorably had a war with words with, you know, one particular person on your season, though there were points in time when you ended up working with them. Do you feel like it's a, you know, a permanent dissolution of a relationship between Dante or Jeff, or do you think they could have a very Palesa and Tom, you know, on and off relationship moving forward?
I think from Jeff's perspective, I think it was definitely a terrible decision. I mean, obviously he wanted his way, and there are ways in which he could have made Dante. Meryl and Dante very paranoid at Tribal Council in order to flush out Meryl's idol, but by not exactly sort of drawing the line so thickly in the sand. And I know the repercussions of doing that, because in our tribe last season, we drew the line so thickly in the sand from the beginning that we were willing to go to rocks immediately. And I think that's the difference between, South African and other international versions of Survivor. I think South Africans are actually, you know, very emotional beings, and the decisions they make can actually have permanent repercussions. And after what Joff did, he sort of made a permanent enemy. And I only realized later on, after my season, that it's actually not needed for you to make a permanent enemy, because if you do make a permanent enemy, your permanent enemy might make more friends than you at Merge. Mm-hmm. And then you have a big problem on your hands afterwards. You know what I mean? So I do think that even though he would have, you know, tried to get them paranoid enough, but I don't think that he should have created that much drama out of that particular event, because there should be a point where you are willing to work with the people in your particular tribe to get numbers at Merge. Because if the people that you have drawn a hate relationship with, and you've drawn those lines with into Merge, if they go to Merge and they make more friends than you, you're pretty much done for. So, it was a terrible decision for him to do that, because he could have definitely still gotten what he wanted out of Tribal Council without making it so dramatic and without making, without creating so much drama between himself and Dante and Meryl. So, at the moment, it felt great to him, and he was trying to accomplish a goal, which he did at the end of Tribal Council. But I do think to some point it does create some sort of a downfall for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that social capital is the currency with which the game is played. And ideally, you're not yelling at people across the aisle at Tribal Council. I mean, that's actually why I really liked it from Maba, who got as much as Jeff did out of it, but she didn't get her hands as dirty. And I really liked that from her, that it was more of like a positive social thing with Nicole that we were seeing from her, rather than her also having that really toxic, negative things with other people on the tribe. But when we're talking about damaging relationships, we got to talk about it from the other side, which is Dante, who, as I said, destroyed everything with Rob and Nicole in their swap tribe. Obviously, we had, you know, earlier issues with Tanya, gets to this tribe and makes more enemies. We saw last episode Jeff saying it was him versus Dante, which didn't really make sense at the time, but I feel like maybe they took that confessional out of like these events, because that makes a lot of sense. So Dante was talking, you know, physical versus social, and he did a lot to prove to us that he is not social. And I think that he did that with very good skill. Like, I believe him. He's not very social. He did a lot wrong in this episode. Would you agree, Mike?
Yeah. And look, Dante, I am more than happy to hop on a deep dive with you after the season to get your opinion on everything. But I'm going to say it. Dante
deep
came
dive
up like
was
an
a pun?
Asshole.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But he came up like a big old asshole this episode with the way he was behaving. And part of me was really seeing red initially, just because maybe it's because the way that I view Survivor is from more of a social perspective than who's going to catch the most fish, which is maybe the way that Dante was viewing. But, yeah, exactly. Punching fish. That's how he really gets in the big catch. But I think that maybe I'm starting to come around on Dante just because I'm realizing that from a character perspective, he is completely over these people. And from that perspective, it's kind of funny to watch him, you know, when he, after they lose the reward challenge, he's like, God, I have to, you know, I have to feed all these efforts who want to vote me off. Like, it's kind of fun to watch him exasperated, considering that, again, from the first episode, I thought it was going to be like head in the clouds, dude bro, coffee shop owner, but he's the one who is disparaging his own brand, his own coffee shops when talking to Jeff. I mean, his behavior this episode was absolutely terrible. And you can see why he's been alienating people from, you know, Jacques to Nicole and Rob to now Jeff and Maba. I think it's just, it seemed like he has lost patience, I think, for dealing with interpersonal dynamics. I think that maybe it's weird that, you know, you say he's a henchman of Meryl. I think maybe he's like Meryl's muscle almost, whereas Meryl might try to helpfully talk people into a, you know, more courteous places, even though she might not do that with Nicole. It seems like Dante is just having nothing of it, which might not portend well to his chances at the merge, but he certainly, I mentioned to you last week, Shannon, is Dante the villain of this season? I think with his performance in this tribal council in particular, making somebody cry by insisting that you're only here because of luck, I think that he has now cemented himself as the villain of the season, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, whether you agree with what Jeff was doing or not, like, he put the bait out there, and this is another pun, and Dante completely took it, because Dante was, like, authentically fighting with him like that. You know, Jeff was obviously doing a bit where it was part of a plan and had an agenda, and Dante was just fighting with him, and that was after obviously calling them useless and yelling at Maba in the challenge and the reward was such a bad look. Also, considering it was her birthday, Dante, like, maybe lay off the birthday girl. There was so much bad social play in this episode, which of course does not rule him out of winner contention, as Survivor South Africa will tell you. So, Belessa, speaking from that standpoint, as someone who has extreme experience with someone who might act like this, what were you thinking of Dante in this episode?
I definitely know someone who might act like this. Their name's called out. But I mean, I think people have such a different perspective of what playing the game actually means. And so Dante definitely feels like the physical game is more important than the social game. And because of that, he's trying to come up with the fact that just because, you know, I'm strong and I can fish. And look, let's talk about the fishing a little bit, because honestly, I don't think it really matters which island you're on. Even the fishing is not going to really be a lot of fish. Like, sometimes you catch a fish or two because you're the only person that can fish. But there's so many other contributors on the Island of Survivor other than, you know, the things that you do physically. And not everyone can make fire at the same time. And not everyone can go and fish at the same time. And so Dante feels like the physical game is obviously more important than the social game. And he actually says more than once, like, if you want to go play the social game, go home, go back home and, you know, go do that in a coffee shop, which made me laugh so hard, because to be honest, as soon as you get into merge, and in fact throughout Survivor, the people that win the game are the people who play the strongest social game, because the people who win, definitely not always, but I mean, if you go in to merge, you do need some kind of a social game, and you need some sort of social perspective, because you need to work with people to get to the end, unless you're planning to actually win absolutely every immunity challenge until the end. And if that's not what you're planning to do, then you do need some sort of a social perspective. And Dante really came out as the villain on this one. And I mean, Maba is so cute. I think I find her as the cutest person here. She's always sort of laughing when she needs to. And, you know, when she's sad, she always cries. And even though I don't feel like she's had very strong decision making, even though her and Jeff have made, you know, these decisions, but I think it's more Jeff than her. But she really is part of the greater alliance in terms of the decision that was made this week. Dante really messed it up big time when it comes to his social game. He's literally trailing on zero, from 10 to 0 in terms of his social game.
Yeah. I mean, when you threaten to hug someone with your fist, like, that's not exactly... I would say that trumps putting a dirty spoon back in, like, a bowl of chocolate any day of the week. I'm going to put out the call right here. Dante is going to be the angriest juror, because I know he's not making that final tribal council, and I feel like he's going to be like, there's going to be two, in his opinion, undeserving players that make it to the end. He's going to be like, how many fish did you catch? You know, like, I competed in these challenges, and if I lost, it was only by millimeters. What were you guys doing? I definitely see that happening, you know, 10 weeks from now when we get to the finale.
Yeah, I'll vote with you with my fist jury argument incoming. But look, everyone has different values in the game. I think anyone who's watched the show, you know, as we do as super fans, agree strategic and social values are more important. But it's Dante's prerogative, I guess, to think that, like, contributing to camp and being physical is what he values, but you don't have to be rude about it, you know? Like, that's the problem, is, like, obviously you need to be at least social enough to not be making people cry, ideally. I think that I'm going to give that now as a rule on this podcast. Don't make people cry on the show. That's always a bad thing. And I think as well, strategically, beyond the social, there was a lot of issues here, because even when Nathan gets voted out, he's, like, swearing and he's mad. It's like, dude, you're about to find out he was that one vote for Meryl. So the person who turned on you as well was Nathan. So I don't think he even realizes how out of the loop he is. I want to talk about the merge later on, but there are so many people that he has managed to piss off in the first few phases of this game. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's such an interesting change in character. And I totally agree that I think it's totally within his own right to, you know, feel what is the best tenets that define a good Survivor game, especially because he probably thinks he's playing the best game by that metric. And I can totally understand how a player would want to say, like, well, the things that I'm doing is falling into a good game because this is what I value in a good game. It just comes down to, and this is a reason why one of my big Survivor pet peeves is saying that someone, quote unquote, deserves to be there or doesn't, which seems to be the big crux of the argument of Dante against Jeff and Maba, is because everyone has different criteria for that. It's when you try to imprint your own criteria onto others in maybe not the most courteous way possible is when it really sends your game south. And yeah, I mean, even though Dante has survived, he's entering the merge not only with a pretty vocal enemy, but a pretty vocal enemy who is now, you know, has a plurality at the merge and seems to have some pretty good connections. You know, with him comes Maba and Mike. With Mike might come Rob and Nicole and Darrow. So I think that while he thought he's out of the woods just yet, he's stepped into an even darker, deeper set of woods that's going to be even tougher to climb or swim out of.
Yeah, can I just say that in this particular episode, I'm actually so proud of Mike. For someone who in the past episode looked to be quite docile and, you know, didn't really have much to do with the game and was sort of, I feel like this season, there are so many people that were perceived to sort of be floating with the game and sort of reached where they are just by, you know, steadily going ahead and just, like, you know, catching the wave on the game. But in this particular episode, Mike definitely stepped up and said, you know, I'm going to start talking to some people and I'm going to start being active. And this is not from me being biased, because I actually do know Mike personally. We've worked together in the same radio station. Hmm. So, and last season when I was on Survivor, we were working together in the same station. And because he's such a big fan, every time I'd come to work, he'd throw this big noise at work and say, oh my gosh, have you guys watched Palace on Survivor? Because it's amazing. But it's definitely not coming from a biased opinion. And I was saying even before that, I mean, I feel like he's been very quiet and docile so far. But this season, he's tried to take charge a little bit more in his own way. And, you know, in his very social but quiet way, trying to speak to Mike and get a lot more people on his side, which is great because of his personality. He's so easy to get to know and so easy to understand and easy to get along with that that character really came through by just how many allies he has in the game so far.
Yeah, I mean, last week I was critical of his decision to, you know, empower Saola, which is now something Jeff has well undercut. And I do actually wonder what Jeff doing this to Nathan will do to his new bromance with Rob, which I absolutely love. They're like Romeo and Juliet now with these fighting families. I'm really excited to see how that goes.
Uh-oh. Well, we know what happened to them, so hopefully that they're going to do better than those two did.
Yeah, don't spoil the ending of that. But no, I love that bromance. And I am still critical of what he did last episode, because now, even knowing how poorly he acted with Steffi and how bad their relationship was, I feel like why even more so would you empower Saola through the game, and also on that iteration of that tribe where she's going to come in and have her allies and, you know, Rob and Sipe and then Jacques adjacent to that. But so I don't like that still, but I really, really did like what he was doing in this episode. And the fact that he seems to have leapfrogged Steffi with a lot of her allies, you know, Rob and Sipe, and he had such a good social connection with Rob that I feel like that, if it doesn't get ruined by this, you know, two fighting family thing, could actually pay a lot of dividends down the line. And that's all down to his social work.
Yeah, I wonder if now looking back, and I was more forgiving of you of the move last week. I'm even more forgiving this week because I think you could see that, and maybe this is me projecting a bit, but I do feel like in retrospect, one of the reasons why Mike also went with Rob above Rocco is I think, much like Rob said, you know, I think my personality just gets along really well with Mike. I feel like it might be vice versa as mm-hmm. well. And I feel like Mike is someone who does sort of form alliances off of vibes. He was the one that was so anti the guys alliance on Laomei 1.0 that he said, all right, let me actually form an alliance with people that I feel like I gel well with and get along with, and I just don't have the same genitalia with is the only reason why I'm in a coalition with them. And so I feel like he's doing a really good job in that regard. And yeah, it's pretty astounding that he has gone into Rob's sort of second tier in terms of trust, the kind of trust tier, which for someone who's as paranoid as Rob, I feel like that says a lot. It really makes me wonder how I honestly do feel like he made the right decision if he was going with someone who he personally felt more comfortable with. To your point, Shannon, this might have all gone up in smoke because his right-hand man ended up, you know, getting rid of this guy as the closest ally. But at the same time, he's working slowly. He even does this really sort of smooth move where Rob comes to him and finally says, you know what? I do know about the idol. I was shrugging it off before in a really awkward way. And Mike's like, it's okay. You don't need to talk about it now. Just talk about it whenever you're cool. You know, I think he was trying to just really come across to Rob as someone who could be trustworthy and friendly to say, hey, I know we're going to have conversations down the line. It's super subtle, and I don't know what this means going into a merge, but I do feel like these last two rounds of the game, Mike has played really well and set himself up very well in terms of making these intertribal connections.
Yeah, he has a very soft approach to the social game. And even though he didn't go to tribal council until last episode, it's the kind of approach that I think shows why he would have been in a good position if he did go to tribal council on any of those tribes. And that's, you know, nothing to turn your back on like that. That is a really, really good skill for the game and something that could definitely help him in the merge. I was really interested on the flip side of that, how Steffi came off in this episode, because she had, you know, day one allies with Rob and then later on Sipe kind of throwing her name out as someone who was kind of all over the place and someone who Rob said was next out at Saula, I guess. I don't know if that was true. So, Palesa, how did you feel Steffi came across at this stage of the game?
I think, you know what, I always got the vibe, especially after the first three episodes, that Steffi was at the bottom of her alliance, the Amigos alliance. You know, at some point, Sipe was definitely at the bottom of the alliance. But as soon as the first split happened, Sipe made so many moves on her tribe in terms of sending the right people or making the decision to send her former Amigos to the Island of Secrets. And they were sort of bouncing off that okay, Sipe actually has our back on there. And, you know, every time someone was going to go on the Island of Secrets from the Amigos, it would either be Rob or someone. And then Nathan and Nicole went together. But I always got the vibe that Steffi didn't really have a great foothold on that alliance. And because of that, obviously we all know that Rob and Nathan have the biggest romance this season. And as soon as she mentioned the fact that, you know, Nathan might not be strong enough and that sort of thing, it really did, you know, rub Rob up the wrong way. And because of now the moves that she's making, and she's a very aggressive individual, and doesn't really mean that she makes decisions aggressively, but when she does try to make decisions, it does come off as rather aggressive because of her personality. And I know someone like her, because I feel like to someone's perspective, I understand her, because she's a little bit like me. You know, sometimes even if you're trying to make the simplest decision, but she's a very passionate being, and it might come off as aggressive to somebody else who's thinking, okay, let's hold off for a bit. And for a while after the first tribe swap, Steffi didn't make any decisions, and she really was floating on that on her tribe, and she wasn't even talking to Rob that much. Even though they were on the same tribe, they weren't having that much conversation in terms of strategy. So she does really seem to be at the bottom of her alliance, and that makes her really easy to boot off if they need someone to sort of you know, get off because she's not making the right decisions, or because she's becoming a threat to someone else on the tribe.
Here's a hot take for you. I think that Steffi getting sent to iOS last week might have been the unluckiest thing for her personal, you know, perspective in the game. Just because I really do feel like one of the reasons why Mike was able to get the jump on Steffi when it came to coming to Rob is because, you know, it's been, what, ages since Steffi and Rob have voted together since the Paul vote, which seemed like years ago at this point, whereas Mike voted along with Rob, seemed to conspire with him together to get rid of Rocco this past vote. It's definitely, I feel like Survivor can be a game of what have you done for me lately? And considering that what Mike has done for him lately, and then when you have Steffi coming in, sort of giving off all these, I wouldn't say, you know, what she's saying is not inaccurate. I definitely agree with that. But I think, again, if we're going back to this idea of content versus intent, her intent has always been, from the very beginning, a little intense, a little cold, a little, you know, talking at like an arm's length. And I wonder if that just didn't rub Rob the right way. And so I feel like, unfortunately, in her missing a vote to really solidify her trust with people like Rob and C-Pay, unfortunately, Mike has now sort of shone brighter in their eyes because they know they can trust him. They have tantamount evidence. Whereas Steffi, they can say, well, we haven't been on a tribe with her. She's been gone all this time. We have no idea what to think of her. I know that there was actually a scene in the next time on from last week's episode of her saying, like, I don't trust these two. I don't think we got that scene this episode. So I'm remiss to know who those two people are. If it's Rob and C-Pay, then I feel like their thoughts are validated.
Well, she said in this episode that she loves Rob and C-Pay. Like, they were the ones saying negative things about her. And while she did miss out on the vote and being able to show her loyalty through her vote, she also came in and said to Rob, you know, Nathan's been kind of slightly annoying me. He was like, okay, you're dead to me. Like, Mike came in and was I love Nathan. And Rob's like, great, I love you. Like, that's all it takes. So I feel like that was the wrong read on Rob to insult Nathan at all. And in saying that, pray for Nicole, because she did a lot more to Nathan. These relationships are really interesting to me. And what I find really interesting is, because of the kind of structure of the pre-merge and a lot of people not going to tribal council for a very long time, as kind of like, so Ula at first was the disaster tribe, and then very much like now May became the disaster tribe. It all just became about what social work are you putting in. And we talk about Steffi and Dante, who, you know, even on Steffi's old tribe, some negative social work happening there that might hurt them at the merge. And we talk about Mike, who even not going to tribal council, someone like Jeff, as we saw, putting in that social work. And it really was so much about the social game as tribes were not going to tribal council.
Plus, on the note of Mike, I do want to ask really quick, because it's very rare when we have, you know, we're talking with people who knew of current contestants beforehand. I know that we haven't seen too much of Mike stuff outside of the Rocco stuff until these past couple episodes. But from what you've been seeing of him on Island of Secrets, is there any sort of like personality differences between him on the island and him in the office? Or is it sort of like a one for one comparison?
Absolutely. It's definitely a one for one comparison. I mean, he really is the sweetest guy, and he's so easy to get along with. For example, like where we used to work at our radio station, he came way after I was already at the station, and we created a bond so quickly because I think I've trained him through one or two radio presenting when he was coming there. He was really new to the radio space, and he really is someone that's easy to get along with. And I mean, that's really shown with how many allies he has, and not because he's been aggressive, but because just him as, you know, in his natural state, he's great to have a conversation with, and he's really easy to approach. He's a very approachable person, and he's not even shy to go and approach other people on a friendly level and start having a conversation, which is what have gotten him connections with people that are so alike like him. And I feel like him and Maba are so alike. And even though I don't know Maba from prior, but I really get the same vibe off her, that she's that kind of friendly person that you really don't want to annoy. And, you know, she's just such a genuine human being that, you know, it's someone that you don't want to hurt, someone who's just really friendly and easy to get along with. And he's really come out with that, especially in this last episode, in this particular episode, that he shows that how easy he is to get along with, because he doesn't pose as a threat to anyone. And I think in Survivor, that's such a very good personality trait to have, that he doesn't come out as a threat to anyone. He seems really docile to everyone, and even to the people who are trying to work with him. There are no threatening personality traits about him. And so because people go on and, you know, talk to him, and as soon as they start talking to him, they're like, yeah, he's a cool guy and I can start this alliance with him, because they're really not threatened, whether they're not threatened socially and they're not threatened physically by him. It gets a lot easier to talk to him and get to know him.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really do enjoy the game that he's playing. He's been one of my favorites from the beginning, just in, as well, what he can bring to the TV. I love that they have so many radio personalities, Palesa, like you and John and Mike, and it does make for someone who, you know, knows how to give good content. But another person who gives great content, who I want to dive into his game in this episode, it was so complex, so important, is Darrell, who ended up being... Yes, literally since we made him an ironic fave, he has become so important. I was laughing at the beginning of the episode how he was talking about how he was a swing vote with three pairs. It's not really how three pairs works, but then he ended up being so important because Nicole obviously did split from Nathan, and he had this information and this fake idol, and he went to Island of Secrets. There was so much going on with Darrell this episode. So Mike, as our resident Darrell expert, please walk us through the craziness that Darrell was bringing in this episode.
Oh, Darrell, my sweet little doo-doo. This is a great episode for him in so many ways. First off, so interesting to see Survivor South Africa pull out something that Survivor US has been doing as of late in their previously ons and revealing new information. We did not see this last week, but apparently, remember that time that Shannon, you and I were praising that, oh, Jacques didn't tell anybody about his idol. This is great. This doesn't happen in Island of Secrets. Well, Jacques didn't tell anyone about his idol, but Darrell did.
And the that should be... We can't praise anyone anymore.
So that should be really fun come the merge if Jacques doesn't realize that Darrell told half the people in the game about the fact that he has an idol. But it's so interesting to watch his dynamic, because I really do feel like he's just come across as so innocuous that it really has endeared himself. I mean, when he goes to Nicole last episode and he's like, yeah, Sipe said that you were really cool, so I hope I can work with you. I think any other person, you'd be like, okay, what is this guy doing? This is so, you know, transparent. But honestly, Darrell is so puppy-like that I feel like people take it with genuine sincerity. Yeah. And I will say, I thought he actually, you know, he got some information this episode. We can certainly talk about that lie that he put out there, which was so Darrell, like textbook Darrell of just copying and pasting half the lie that was used a week ago and just seeing if it could be used again. But I actually low-key love the fact that he did not tell anybody when the merge was coming, because had he let that information slip, Nicole is not voting Nathan out. I will state that in ink. I think that if Nicole had known that there was not going to be another vote before the merge, then she would not agree to that deal of let's get rid of Nathan now and what a Meryl or Dante later, because there wouldn't be another opportunity. She would say, oh, the merge is coming? Great, I'm going in with my little brother. We're definitely going to, you know, vote out Dante here. So I think that as, you know, self-sufficient as Darrell said he wanted to be this episode with the idol and everything, I think he made a really fun decision by hiding this information. And of course, Darrell has another fake idol. So God help him if he goes into the ocean again. But I think this was such a fun episode for Darrell. You know what? I told this to you, Shannon, offline. Now that Nathan is gone, I'm going to make Darrell my winner pick. I'm going to try to manifest this.
It's terrible.
Because I love him so, so much that I really want him to just succeed while everyone else is gunning for each other.
Yeah.
I don't know about winner pick, though.
It's a terrible
listen, Palesa, you proved that anything could happen. You voted for Tom last that season, which I don't think anybody could show. So like Survivor South Africa is really a place where anything can happen. So I'm trying to put that out in the world.
Yeah,
that is true. That is true. But I think, I mean, you're definitely right about Gerard. I mean, this episode was amazing for him. And, you know, the one thing that I've had, my biggest problem with this season has always been, it's called the Island of Secrets, but nobody has been able to keep a damn secret in this season. And Gerard, I think, has kept the first secret with not telling everyone that merge is coming up next. And I'm really happy about that, because even though I've been, you know, quite sad that everybody's been telling everyone the secrets of the game, that has really put a spanner in the works. And that shows in the outcome of this particular episode, because had he said that, you know, next up is Merge and we don't have any more time to take out Dante and Meryl, maybe something different would have happened. And even though I would have loved something different to have happened, I'm really happy that for the first time, someone has been able to keep a secret. And now we can finally actually call it the Island of Secrets.
Yeah, I think 100% something different would have happened, because I think Nicole wouldn't have made this move. If we want to believe that what the reason Jeff and Marbo were doing it was because of Challenge Prowess, they probably wouldn't have made the move. He had so much power here with the information, let alone getting an idol. And Mike, you've spoken about how information should be an advantage in Island of Secrets. This was the perfect way to use that. I was laughing so hard at the confessional Nathan had when he was like, well, I know it's a lie about phoning home because it's my lie from last week. And, you know, I have to say, good job on using precedent, because that's something we were saying in Name That Lie for Nicole a couple of weeks ago. But maybe not that precedent. Like, I think that was the problem. But I do like to use the reward, because that feels like it could be plausible.
Yeah, but he also described it in such a weird way. He's like, I got to choose between a phone call home or a juicy pizza. Have you ever heard someone describe a pizza as juicy?
Yeah, but I think I'm making a motion to call Island of Secrets now ET, because it's where everyone phones home, apparently. I love that this is now the lie that everyone has. I love that he has a fake idol. Mike, what did you think about the fact that they gave him a one-time idol? Because I know people are like yelling that there's so many idols in. I really didn't hate it, because 50% chance you don't even get to use it, and it's over before the merge anyway.
I mean, I'll admit I was a little down on it when I saw it come to play. I kind of wish that if he had just gotten the information that the merge was next time, I feel like that's totally fine. Because at that point, even though this was a one-time idol, we would have then had five idols in the game at once. And there was a chance that at that tribal council with Saula, there would have been three idols played, which, listen, only Survivor South Africa Philippines can do three idols being played in one tribal council, okay? Don't try to do that, Island of Secrets. So I feel like, and you know, we have expended a regular idol as well. So we are going into the merge with three regular idols, one fake idol, and one extra vote.
And one lost fake idol, which is somewhere.
And I don't know if you noticed that, Shannon, but actually, again, another hallmark of Survivor editing as of late, they brought back from Survivor Edge of Extinction the lower third advantage that occurs during confessionals, where Darrow's confessional briefly said one, you know, fake immunity idol before it showed his position. So maybe we'll get more of that. Maybe that's production sort of hinting that there are more advantages to come. I am remaining optimistic, because I feel like one of the downsides of all these advantages is that they all get expended at one point in time. But I feel like, Palesa, your season and this season has proven that these contestants are willing to expend advantages just willy-nilly. So I highly doubt we're going to get to a position where, you know, Jacques, Nicole, and Rob are all going to hold on to their idols at, like, the final six.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. At some point, they are going to come out. And the thing about, you know, having idols in play is that it also creates extra paranoia for the contestants. And I know a lot of Survivor Super fans don't like the fact that there's so many advantages and so many idols, but it actually can come out as, you know, as great TV, because when you have something in your pocket, the more paranoid you get, because not only are you trying to create strategy with other people, but now you're also worried about how and when exactly are you going to play this thing, in addition to all the things that are already happening on camp and in the game. So it is going to make for an exciting merge, and to see just how much of that those secrets are going to come out. Already, Draw has spilled some secrets about, you know, Jacques having an advantage and an idol and all that stuff. And so when that information starts coming out and merge, which we're going to see really soon, and I'm super excited about that, we're going to see which idol is going to be the most important to flush first.
Yeah, I was trying to come up with Name That Lie for Darrow, and then I was like, you know, he's so unthreatening that he could have said anything and no one would have cared. He could have been like, there were giant busts of Rob and Sandra. They would have been like, you know what, Darrow, whatever, like, we're kind of dealing with something right now. So, like, he's flying so far under the radar just by being Darrow that he can kind of do anything. Like, for me, I felt, you know, maybe do tell Nicole here. I'll try and, you know, get the votes off Nathan, because you're in a Miss Figo thing with Saula, Sipe, the fairy godmother of the Island of Secrets, who just sends her allies there to get idols. you know, is obviously clearly still working with you, trying to keep both of her Saula allies in the game at this point. I feel like the Misfits are more integrated into the Amigos than the Laomei 3 ever were. He's not as threatening, obviously, as the Laomei 3 were. So I feel like they could have worked really, really well, actually, into the wheel that Saula had control over that we talked about last episode. And I feel like that power structure, kind of like Nicole, would have worked with him in the merge. And then he could have, you know, maybe made some plays later. As I've said, I now think it's like a faster-paced game at the merge, which works for someone like Jeff, but not for someone like Doral. So I think strategically using the merge information may have been his best bet, at least with Nicole, if not for like the Laomei 3, you know, with Jeff and Marbra as well, and trying to keep it all Laomei and Saula rather than keeping around Dante and Meryl, who he has no relationship with. But at the same time, like, he's Doral, you know, he's floating to the final five anyway, where he'll have 8 fake idols to play. So it's hard. It's a hard one for me to analyze.
I think he's a very independent person. He's said it over the course of this episode. So honestly, I love Doral, but I don't know how far ahead he was thinking in terms of, you know, people he could link up with at the merge, even though he knew merge was next time. It really did seem like once he found out it was merge, he's like, great, I'm in the merge. And he didn't really think about anybody else. So I think he's just like, I'll go along with the plan. I do want to actually, speaking of idols, talk about Meryl playing hers, because Palesa, you've sort of been on both sides of this, where you were someone who held on to an idol and it needed to figure out, you know, when you wanted to play it and when they were trying to get you to play it. And then you also, at Tribal Council, were able to get Tom to flush an idol by really, you know, very much signaling to him that, hey, we might vote for you. So what were your thoughts about both the plan to get Meryl to flush her idol and the fact that she did end up playing her idol at Tribal Council?
I'm actually really, really, I'm really proud of Jeffrey for being so deliberate in his attempts to get Meryl to flush out an idol or any idol that was happening. And you know, a lot of the things that happen on Survivor are actually not as deliberate as we think they are, because of, like I said, paranoia is actually in your mind 24/7. And that's the one determining factor in the mind of someone who is a castaway and is about to make a big decision whether or not they have an idol. So, I mean, Meryl definitely knew because, you know, I mean, Jeffrey put it straight out there that, look, it's you against us and one of you guys are going. And that was a really deliberate decision, and not a lot of deliberate decisions happen when it comes to idol play. And even though you realize that you might be leaving today, you always have some sort of hope that an idol is a lifeline, and you want to hold on to your lifeline as long as you can. And that's so important in Survivor, to try. And if you don't need to play a lifeline, then don't. Because you are going to need it next time, especially if you've had the paranoia that you might need to use it. So I really am proud of the really deliberate angle that Joffrey took to get Meryl to play her idol, which worked out perfectly. And Meryl had to play her idol. And I really won't fault her for that, because of how Tribal Council went down. She was at a direct threat to play it. And there's so much that goes in your head when you actually think about playing an idol. I think it's actually so much easier to make decisions on Survivor when you don't have an idol than when you do.
Yeah, zero issue with Meryl playing it for me. I mean, if she would have not played it through that Tribal Council with the actual yelling, she would have had pretty big rhino balls, as we say in Survivor New Zealand. And like, I really feel like that was something that she had to do. I want to talk a couple more things in this episode before we move on to the merge. And one of those is a eulogy for Nathan, someone who Mike described last week as the most interesting person in the game, which pretty high up there for me, but maybe not the most interesting because Sipe, but he brought so much to this pre-merge. He was, you know, my brother was saying to me that he never got back to his brother and he was betrayed by his sister. And it was like very theatrical here that Nicole took him out. So Mike, was this a satisfying conclusion to the arc of Nathan for you?
Yeah, this is so interesting because, I mean, the closest comparison, now we made it at the very beginning of the podcast, but it does very feel like a Tevin-like arc where this is a very complicated and strategically involved character who I think in a traditional editing sense would be someone who would make it deep in the game, if not outright, you know, have a chance of winning. To have him go pre-merge, granted close to the merge, but still pre-merge, is pretty crazy to see considering how much we saw of Nathan. I'm still trying to think as to what sunk Nathan's game here, because it really did seem like the stuff he was doing with Jeff and Dante was fantastic, like textbook swing vote stuff. And it really does feel like, you know, had he not stabbed his hand with the machete a few days ago and had they not had a challenge where he had to pull on a rope, maybe he would have survived to the merge. I'm not entirely sure. I guess that there were a couple things that really were foibles in his game. I think one of them was definitely maybe thinking before. It's odd to say thinking before he acted is, you know, something that would be bad for a Survivor player. But I can't help but go back to him trying to throw that challenge in episode five, just because it did end up, you know, it seemed like he was close with Mike and Jeff and even Kubis, and that maybe, you know, that rock draw would have happened and he would have gotten someone like Maba sent home. But my God, was it such a risk? And it was so obvious that I think it really turned off some people who he eventually won back over. And I guess the other problem is that I just don't think maybe he didn't necessarily have a great grasp on his relationship with Nicole or Nicole's thoughts on the game. We talked about this last week with Rocco.
Can you have a grasp on what she did, though? We don't have a grasp on what she did. We just watched it.
That's true, but we're not the ones playing with her. And I guess, you know, you do have to say, is part of playing Survivor trying to manage the various personalities you're dealing with, no matter how random their decisions might be. We talked about this last week with Rocco, where we said Rocco had a great concept of, like, how he felt the game should be played. It was just a matter of him assuming that everyone else had that same mentality, when that's not what Survivor is. And I wonder if partially Nathan's downfall was because he didn't necessarily realize what Nicole was sort of approaching this end of the pre-merge like, that he didn't even know that the knife in his back was coming until it was way too late. Though I will say, very gracious exit. Good on him for giving Nicole his hat, pulling, I guess, an anti-Jonathan Penner and giving someone his hat in leaving. So he went out with his head held high. It was such a complicated, interesting game, and I give all the thumbs up to Nathan for providing us with great television the past 8 weeks.
It's so sad because he finally wanted to play, you know, like after being kind of on and off throughout the first few episodes, he was finally feeling really good about his game, and like the chippy chats definitely do show that as well. In the last couple of weeks, he was doing some good stuff. Even in this episode, the way that he was kind of making that chasm between Jeff and Maba and Meryl and Dante bigger and him being their only workable option, that was good stuff, you know. And if he really was taken out because he was a challenge liability, I still don't even know what to say about that. It was a weird thing for me because he is this huge player, and at the merge he would have been so integral and so important. And that's not why we saw him being taken out. You know, we saw him almost being like euthanized against his will because of the challenge liability, because of the injuries, because of maybe the way he's looked at the game before and really not wanting to be there. And it's like, he did want to be there. He didn't feel like he needed to go because of the injury. In fact, ironically, he was kind of playing up his injury so as not to be a threat, and then they voted him out because of it. Like, I thought it was a little bit patronizing, especially watching the votes on the Mnet website and for Nicole saying, like, you know, I want to be like you when I'm big. Go home and rest up. It's like, he doesn't want to rest. He's fine. Like, it's fine that you're making this move, even though we don't understand it, but know that this is for you. Like, you are not taking out someone because they want to go or because they're injured or because they can't be here. You 100% are betraying someone for your own personal agenda and what you think is best for your game. Like, don't act like this is something Nathan A wanted or expected, or that it's an injury thing. Like, it was a blindside, you know? And I think they were looking at it like, and the reasons for it was as if he didn't want to be there, or as if he didn't bring much to the game, which simply was not true.
I think the biggest problem is, you know, when you say Shannon from the beginning, he finally wanted to play. The fact that we have to use the word finally when it comes to playing the game is what got people the most pissed off about Nathan. And I can attest to this when it comes to last season's vote to Mariska. Mariska was our swing vote. We needed her for the numbers to get rid of either Tom or Shanae, who are now in the minority. And Mariska was right in the middle. And the only thing that made us get rid of Mariska was just that slight thing that said to us, maybe she actually doesn't want to be here. And Nathan has really shown those traits for a very long time in the game, that he doesn't actually want to be here. And of course, fine, it's okay that he's very accident prone and every time he gets injured, but there's a difference between being injured and also and still wanting to be like in the game, and being injured and wanting to be a liability on camp and wanting everyone to take care of you and sort of, you know, treat you like a little baby. And when you're on the challenges, you're always complaining, I can't do it, I can't do this. The emotional impact on a tribe to actually try and get things done together is way more than what you're actually doing. So he could have been injured and say, I'll fight it through. And the words that you use and the dialect that you use to your tribe mates make them feel stronger, you know. And when I saw the particular, that the challenge that they lost, which even was by a hair, but he always kept saying, I can't do this. And Nicole was always there trying to say, no, don't worry, put your legs together. You can do it. Just push a little bit harder. But the fact that he's bringing out the emotions of saying, I'm at my wit's end and I actually don't want to do this and I actually can't do this, that makes the tribe feel, this guy doesn't actually want to be here. And even if we need your number, and even if we want you to be here because you're a close alliance to us, the fact that you are showing traits of not really putting 100% and not really wanting to be here and not being emotionally strong for this place is a liability. And I think that's what put Nathan under the bus.
Yeah, that's a really amazing insight. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been looking at, you know, social media, and it really does seem like, not to paint Survivor South Africa alumni with a broad brush, but I know I was following some of your cohorts, Palesa, particularly Marion and Xavion from Survivor South Africa Champions, and it seemed like they were very anti-amigos. They were celebrating when Nathan got buttered out, and I'm not going to begrudge anybody for liking certain players and not others, but I was just sort of thinking, you know, where did this come from? Because Nathan, again, seemed pretty innocuous to me from a personality perspective, but I could totally see your point, Palesa, in that if watching what Nathan's doing reminds you of when you're out there on the island and you're dealing with these personality types, I can imagine that wishy-washiness is probably like the number one pet peeve of other Survivor contestants to people out there on the island.
Absolutely. I mean, you either want to be in the game or you don't. And the game is hard on all of us. I mean, we've come out with 10,000 scratches on our legs and everyone gets cut somewhere, somehow. The mosquitoes are eating at you. It's not an easy place to be in. And even though, fine, an injury maybe is one up, but we're all going through some things. And the one thing that's most important to any castaway is you actually wanting to be here and wanting to play. And as soon as you display traits of you trying to give up or not being strong enough to be here, not just for yourself, but for the people who rely on you for an alliance, it really gets to you.
Yeah, and some of that was obviously extremely genuine, you know, from the beginning of whether he wanted to be there. And then some of it was gameplay. You know, he threw a challenge and that was such a bad look that it took him so long to do the puzzle and it was all on him. And obviously he was playing up his injury as well. So it was like the bad, genuine basis was there. And then he just like elevated it even more. And I can totally see how that would have put people off. The last thing from this episode that I want to touch on, and then we're going to talk about how we're set up for this crazy merge, is what people are calling the Spit Shake 7. Love that alliance name. Amazing. Which is something Kourbis, I think, you know, obviously really brought up. And I like that from Kourbis because he has very few options. And, you know, Dante and Meryl aren't in a good spot on the other side. I really liked how he made it quite specific, you know, in terms of maybe we don't have to go all the way to the end, but like at least at the merge, let's have it not be one of us. And it's like, that actually makes sense to me. Like, why not? Every single person on that tribe has a contemporary on the other tribe. So it's like, if you're going to vote out Mike, instead vote out Jeff. If you're going to vote out Kourbis, instead vote out Dante or Meryl. You know, like, I kind of like that. And in a secret scene, Steffi seemed weirdly on board with it. And I think that if you want to buy yourself some time, that is something that could kind of make logical sense to everyone in the tribe without it needing to be a long-term thing that would just break down because it's hard to trust. Do you agree, Mike? Or what did you think of that?
Well, yeah, let's remember that due to CPay's speech, it seems like the mentality once we hit the merge is vote out all the buff dudes. And look at Kourbis, who's a buff dude himself who just voted out a buff dude. You have to imagine he's feeling like, okay, once we get to the merge, which might be coming soon, that's when I'm really going to be targeted. Let me try to insulate myself. And he, like Darrow, I think is really independently minded. And I loved his little like sit down casual tea conversation with CPay and Letitia, the elders of the tribe, essentially being like, yeah, let's talk about this Spit Shake 7. It's very interesting. I mean, this is such a very, I mean, I'll be completely honest. If this was the final seven, I wouldn't be particularly mad at it. It's such a weird group of people that if they did end up sticking through, which they might stick through one vote, like I could honestly see them voting out a Dante at the merge and just, you know, stick together for one of those votes and then quickly fracture. But they're such diverse personalities and strategic types and relationships that I think that they could stick together if they want to. I think it was a good move of Kourbis though, because as someone who feels like he's entering the merge with no allies to his name, for him to make just a basic Bond so that if his name does get thrown around, he hopes there are at least six people who would say, let's not get rid of him. I think it's like the base level of, you know, safety he could provide for himself come the merge. So I'll give him credit there. I think he's attempting to insulate himself while still simultaneously giving himself some wiggle room to jump around for. Plus, he got everybody spitting in the middle of camp. So bonus points for that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, going forward, and let's talk about the merge in that. There are so many connections, which is interesting to me, but also so many disconnections and people who just won't work together. And Palesa, I want to hear from you, because you're someone who saw a major ally of yours taken out on the other side, you know, when Josie was taken out. And I think all eyes are on how is Rob going to respond when Nathan doesn't show up at camp. Do you think that this is something where Nicole and Jeff and Marba, to an extent, can go to him and say, Nathan wanted out, there's extreme precedent for that, he was injured, it was like a mercy kill. Do you think he will buy that, or do you think the emotion of seeing him gone is just like now unworkable with those people, especially Nicole, considering he said the two people he trusts most in the game were Nathan, that's not great, and Nicole, also not great now.
Yeah. It's going to be quite a show, I promise, because, I mean, like you said, Rob and Nathan's bromance has been the biggest bromance of the season, and any friendship, in fact, of the season. And Rob, in fact, just puts off everyone who says anything sideways about Nathan, as we saw with Steffi, when as soon as Steffi, you know, said anything, you know, sideways about Nathan, he was just like, you know, Steffi, I'm not really sure about Steffi. And even during the challenge, when Rob had to drag Nathan to go and score a point for his tribe, he even said, I'm sorry, man. And I mean, it's so hot. It's so heartwarming. And of course, there's going to be some repercussions for Nicole from that. So if they are smart enough, if Nicole particularly is smart enough to spin a story about why Nathan has left under her watch to Rob, then it would be a successful merge for her within the you know, within her new alliance with Rob and everyone else she's made friends with. But if she's not able to spin the story right, I feel like she should, all the tears that she's shed already in the game, she should bring all those tears together and cry an ocean in front of Rob in order for him to believe that it was a genuine, you know, story why Nathan has left. And if that's not the case, Rob might actually not buy it at all, and it might be detrimental to Nicole's game. However, it would be actually better for Rob to try and believe, you know, Nicole's story, because Nicole is coming with new allies, and it's always beneficial for someone who was your prior ally to come with new allies to create an even bigger alliance, which is something that you will need at merge. So, I mean, for Rob's sake, who I actually like in the game so far and who's been doing quite well, it would actually be beneficial for him to not hold any grudges against Nicole and, you know, welcome the new allies to create an even stronger and bigger alliance, because the Amigos were great. You know, the Amigos minus Nathan now, who's gone, they'll be even better with new allies in the game and create almost like, you know, a big, strongest alliance there, which is always, it's actually always sad. I'm actually hoping for both. I do hope that Rob creates a big alliance with Nicole. But to some extent, I do hope that there isn't one big decision-making alliance that doesn't allow other people to actively play the game and sort of throws everyone out the game who's not in their alliance. And then it doesn't really make for exciting TV, because all we're seeing is this one big giant of an alliance throwing everyone out and not giving anyone a chance to sort of penetrate their alliance. In order to give us more exciting allies or breakaway allies and more options in the game.
Yeah, I can't see how there would possibly be that major alliance, like from your season kind of running things, because there's, as I said, just so many disconnections. Like from Rob's perspective, you know, Dante and Meryl obviously will be like, it wasn't, a mercy kill. It Nathan wasn't on board. It was a blindside. And to them, they'll say, well, you didn't know what was going on because we were trying to blindside you to flush the idol. Also, why would Rob believe Dante and Meryl? But from his perspective, I don't think whatever they say, he'll be truly okay with. I feel like he'll be like to Nicole, I left you alone with Nathan for like 1 minute. Like you couldn't get into the merge. You know? It's just such a tight connection. I feel like this will hurt him a lot. Even if now I feel like Saul and Lao Mei would logistically, objectively be a good alliance, because before, where I felt Saula were too strong, and even in this episode, Jeff was talking about bringing his three with a Saula three and making a six, that never felt like something that would really work for the Lao Mei side, because Saula brought in so many other things and so many other options. You know, they were the wheel. Lao Mei were one of their many, many side pieces, which is not where you want to be. Now they're on more even footing. Objectively, I think that numbers-wise, that works. But from an emotion perspective, like, how can Rob go in and trust Nicole and trust these people he's never met but who voted out his number one ally? Like, I just don't think that's a good breeding ground for long-term connections and relationships.
Yeah.
But I do feel like for Rob, what does he have now? Like, he was the one saying the Spit Shake 7 were a fairy tale. Disgusting sounding fairy tale, by the way. Like, what is the children's book that is the Spit Shake 7? But now, all the eggs that he had in the Nathan and Nicole basket, his two main allies, have been completely smashed on the floor. You know, Beck and Floyd would not be happy about that. So I feel like I don't know where he's going now. He was someone who I felt was possibly the most powerful person in the game. And in one episode that he didn't even go to tribal council, I'm now worried for him.
I really agree with you, Shannon. And I think for someone who was about to be voted off in the first tribal council, which was Zibay, she's really planted her feet a lot deeper. Now I think she's actually a lot more powerful than Rob is in the game, because not only has she gotten this far in the game, even though people wanted to vote her off, you know, first, now she's got so many more connections. I mean, she's in the Amigos Alliance, and she's also in the Band of Misfits Alliance, and she's in the new Spit Seven Alliance. And so everyone sort of has come to her and warmed up to her and trusted her with a lot of even decision making, because ever since she's the first tribe swap, she's made so many decisions about who goes to the Island of Secrets. And we can see that by the particular people who have been sent there, that she had a word in it. So, I mean, this is really off topic, but I'm just saying, I'm really proud of how far Zibay has gone. And according to where the Amigos were in terms of majority alliance in the game, she's really at the top of that alliance now.
I was actually just about to say that. I think that while Rob, maybe as of last episode, might have had the best position come merge, I think Zibay takes the crown by far now, just because, like you said, Palesa, because of the number of connections she has. Where, let's say Spit Shake 7 doesn't work out, great. She has the remnants of the Amigos. If that doesn't work out, great. She has the Misfits. She has so many outs. Not to also mention that come merge time, with the, you know, the philosophy that she put out there, it does seem like they might be gunning for your Kubuses, your Dantes, maybe even someone like Rob, who looks stronger, even if challenges don't necessarily, you know, play into those strengths. I don't think anyone's gunning for Zibay because of her challenge strength. So it might come down to people catching wise to her game, but I really do feel like Zibay, especially in these first stages, is so well insulated. My other thing that I'm really looking forward to at this merge is, back in episode 3, we saw Jacques really tank his game with his former Ta'alo members by trying to orchestrate this idol play against Kubus. It seems like him and Kubus have made up. At least they weren't gunning for each other. They both voted for Rocco together. Seems like they're in this loose alliance. But this is going to be the first time that Jacques is going to meet up with Dante and Meryl since that happened. And considering that they also saw him vote out Felix as well, who they were close with, I'll be very intrigued to see if it's water under the bridge for them as well, or if they're going to decide to reignite some old flames and gun for Jacques here as revenge.
Yeah, in terms of Zibay, I think the reason that she as well for me would be, I would say, be saying that she's in the best position at the merge is because, you know, beyond the first vote, from then on, at every iteration of every tribe she's gone to, even with so many tribal councils she's had to go to, she's built new relationships. You know, she left there with a really good position with the Amigos, and she had the Misfits. Now, the Spitshake Seven, I laugh every time I hear that name. But she has made new connections at every tribe. And apart from the bad sermon that we saw last week, which did come up in the previous yarn, which worried me, but besides that, it doesn't really seem like she made any disconnections and bad relationships. And that's what you want. Yes. Whereas on the complete opposite side of the coin is someone like Dante, who for me has merge with potential all over him. They know that yep. side doesn't have an idol now, so you can just gun straight for him. He's obviously a physical threat. And when I'm writing down my disconnections at the merge, there was a common thread, and it was Dante. You know, the ghost of Ting Ting plan that Jacques has going is against Dante. Rob is against Dante. Nicole against, you know, Dante and Meryl. Jeff and Marba are against Dante. And even Kubus, his one ally, seemed to be kind of trying to get that connection away because he sees it as bad news. So for me, there's Sipe at the top and definitely someone like Dante at the bottom. And it really is based on, I think, what we've kind of keyed into here, which is what relationships are you making in a social game, whether you're at tribal council or not? What relationships are you making that you can use at the merge in a crazy voting block relationship merge that doesn't seem to have a clear majority? You need to have as many connections to keep you safe. And he does not.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Ironically enough, Dante's going to get taken out because of the social game.
Apparently that's important.
Or the lack of.
Yeah.
at this point, I mean, completely correct that Sipe has really put herself at the top of each and every alliance, and she's got her foot in every place. But I think it's time for her, as she goes to Mirth, to start talking a little less. Because we've seen history of every time she gets excited and passionate about a particular talk at camp, someone gets a little bit pissed off, like Mike in this particular season, saying, what is she talking about? I mean, you know, where does she get the gall to say that she, you know, she's played the game and she knows everything about the game, and these kind of people need to leave? And every time she says something, there is at least one person that's pissed off. So I think going to merge, I really hope she starts speaking less.
Yeah, I did love at the reward challenge when we get the, you know, the pull of people off the challenge, and her just screaming "refuse, Mikey" over and over again, like it was some sort of mantra, was just a fantastic soundbite. I want to make that my alarm, so that every time I get like personally,
refuse,
you know, I feel like I'm like walking up a mic, yeah, walking up a mountain. I'm like, "Refuse, Mikey. No, you can do it. Refuse those negative voices." It felt very therapeutic for me.
Yeah, between that and between "I'll hug you with my fist" and then Nico also saying Nathan nursing an injured hand, why they made this decision, no one knows. Like, this was like such a quotable episode for me.
A quotable episode it was.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
And we are back. Well, in saying that, in talking through this entire episode, which I think we did justice to because we really looked at it from every single angle, I do want to get to the chizzy. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, I love it so much. Our ringtones are so good at the moment, Mike. I will start us off and give some points. And I'm actually going to make it a Lao Mei 3 special in this episode. So 2 points I'm giving to Jeff. I know that the reasoning was bad, or maybe it wasn't. I'm still hanging on to hope that maybe it wasn't, but it probably was bad. And there were some negatives there as well. But just what he was able to do, the skills that he showed in this episode, like whatever happens next, it was a huge scalp. I think he's in a really, really much better position than he was last week by making this move, whatever the actual methodology was to get there. And I think this is going to be a fast-paced game, and showing the skills that he brought this episode, I trust him to manage that. So I'm giving him 2 points. 1 point I'm going to give to Maba, who, as I've said, got exactly as much done as Jeff, didn't get her hands as dirty. I'm not sure you need to be calling the shots in the pre-merge. I don't think that's something you really need to be doing. She was part of it. She was in the majority. It was her first tribal council. She wasn't yelling at other people who are still in the game, which is always good for her as well. I gave the edge to Jeff because it was really all his doing that we saw. You know, he was really the instigator of it all, so I had to reward him for that. But I think she's definitely deserving of a point. And how much she harped on about the Nicole relationship, which I think is key, you know, throughout, if they had stayed in the pre-merge and throughout the merge as well. She said it to Nicole as well, that that connection was really important to her. And I think she was very key in consolidating that. And then I'm going to give a point to Mike, because as we said, the social play that I saw from him in this episode was really good. The social play we've seen from him all of pre-merge, I think, has been great as well. And the relationship he's made with Rob, I think, could have obviously seen him through a lot of votes in the pre-merge, even above someone like Steffi that Rob had worked with for a very long time, and could also be key in the merge as well, even though Rob now obviously brings less power, but that is obviously a relationship that he made. My honorable mentions, I totally see what you're saying, Palessa, and you've kind of like convinced me away from this about kind of the energy that Nathan was putting out and why they would want to get rid of him. But I still think that if they were getting rid of Nathan for being a challenge liability, like, it's just so crazy. I don't think he was doing anything terrible, at least in this episode. I actually saw a lot of good stuff from him in this episode with the way he was playing the sides against each other and the relationships that he was making. So I think that an honorable mention for him. But yeah, Alame 3. So Mike, who are you giving your points to?
I'm giving mine to Alame 3 as well, but a different Alame 3. I'll give 1 point to Mike and 2 points to Jeff, pretty much for the reasons you said. I won't prolong the points there. But I'm going to give 1 point to my sweet little doo-doo. Let me give it to Darrow. I have not given him any points this season yet. And I honestly do feel like I commend him, as Palessa said, for actually getting information from the Island of Secrets and actually attempting to hold on to it and be able to weaponize it later on. I really do feel like the big blind side of the episode wouldn't have happened if Darrow had divulged that information. He now has a fake idol that actually looks like the other idols. It actually is key-shaped, so he can definitely use that as a bargaining point. I think the fact that he got brought into this alliance, despite the fact that he really didn't have many relationships with anybody, I think is going to do really well at the merge, where, honestly, I do not see him being targeted for quite some time, mm-hmm. just because he is so innocuous. I did put Maba as an honorable mention as well, but yeah, this was a big Laomei episode, and it shows why they're the plurality. Come the merge, it'll be interesting to see if they come back together with Letitia as well to take things over, but big episode for them.
What do you think, Palessa?
Yeah, I think I'll definitely give a point to Mike for how far he's come in this particular episode. He went leaps and bounds in terms of the connections that he created and the more allies he came up with, even for someone who seemingly sort of drifted through the episode so far. And so 1 point to him to create it a big, and I mean, going with Rob is a big alliance because Rob has other allies in the game that you would want to connect with. So a big point to him as well. And obviously a point to Joffrey, 2 points to Joffrey actually, who, like you said, had a strategy, implemented the strategy and had the strategy go the way he wanted it to go, which is amazing. And it's always very, very hard to do that. If you have a strategy, to have it go exactly like you wanted to play out, but I am going to take 1 point away from him because now he's created a big threat for himself after all the speak he has. And not just with Dante and Meryl, but when other people see you at Tribal Council talking so much and creating so many enemies, they want to wonder next time, what if he speaks about what we have going on in our alliance? And what if he breaks a little bit because now he's a little bit of a loose cannon? And I'm going to give another point to Maba because even though she's part of the decision-making alliance with Jeffrey leading, but she's become a lot less of a threat than Jeffrey is, which can get her a lot further in the game come merge because people will think she's not that strong physically and she's not that strong socially. So we'll keep her here and maybe we'll vote her out next week. And then next week will become the other week and the other week will become the other week. And she might find herself sitting in the top 5 or even the top 3 because nobody finds her as a threat.
Mm. So just for scorekeeping, so that's the 2 points for the most for Jeff.
2 points for Jeff and 1 each.
Yeah, well, see, that's a big week for Jeff. He handily wins the chizzy with, you know, the sweep. I don't know if we've had 3 people giving a sweep to someone before, each of us giving 2 points to him. Like, that's a very big deal, but you might not want it, because when people start coming up in the chizzy, they start getting swiftly taken out. Tanya's an example, Nathan is now an example, and as you said, Kalesa, he outs himself as, like, a big personality. He outs himself as a big threat as well, and that comes up in the chizzy, and maybe that makes logical sense of why people who come up in the chizzy end up having a swift downfall. But for this week at least, congratulations to Jeff, who is our chizzy winner. Thank you for following my cat on Instagram. On the other side, let's go to the doof of the week, the worst player of the week who's still in the game. Hard one for me, really a toss-up, but I'm going to have to go with Nicole because I just don't understand the move. We've talked at length about it, but man, Dante was lucky to escape getting my doof of the week this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dante acted doofier in the way that he was approaching dealing with some of these trimers, but I mean, you can't look past the fact that she got rid of one of her closest ally who trusted her pretty blindly. Like, that might have taken Jock's crown, honestly, as the worst move of the season so far. So I feel like you have to acknowledge Nicole here.
I absolutely agree. Nicole definitely is the loser of the week. And it is like, you know, it's like me getting rid of Vusi, someone that that you trust the most. And you'd never want to do something like that, especially even if you don't know when merge is, but you have the feeling. And all castaways have the feeling that merge is coming close. And the one thing you don't want to do is get rid of the people who trust you the most. So Nicole definitely lost this week.
Yeah, I mean, just a baffling move. But let's get out of the intense strategy we've been talking about and go to everyone's favorite segment, the Biostrat Variety Hour. See what social media happenings are happening with Survivor South Africa and the sponsors. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now it's the Biostrat Variety Hour with your host, Shannon Gay. And also Mike Bloom.
All right. Well, the main thing I want to talk about in the Biostrat Variety Hour is Probiflora. I know that might be blasphemous, but I'm obsessed with Probiflora. I was so upset that it was like roast Survivor pizza that everyone was so excited about at the reward and not Probiflora. And I do have an exclusive for you, which is that I was sent by a relative a Probiflora ad that is Survivor themed, and it's so magical. So we're going to play that. But just to set it up, it's a tribal council set. And that's all I'll leave it with. So let's play that ad.
Does your stomach feel like it's going to tribal council every day? Does it feel bloated and uncomfortable? Give your stomach the immunity it deserves. Probiflora, for that good gut feeling.
I love it so much. And I was having a very extended conversation with my fiance, you know, hashtag date night. What does your stomach going to tribal council mean? Like, he thinks it means, like, is your stomach really anxious? I thought it meant, like, is your stomach trying to vote someone out? Does anyone have an idea of what this ad means?
Well,
I think it means is your stomach in knots. You know what I mean? Because every time you go to tribal council, and I've been there quite a number of times, I know your stomach is always in the most knots when you go there. And like the most anxious feeling you could have, your stomach feels like it's in the biggest knots.
See, that's interesting because I took what happened in the script right after the narrator, the very lovely sounding narrator, talked about this when they said what like, did your stomach feel like it's going to tribal council like bloated? And I wonder if it's like, I think it's actually more so in your camp, Shannon, of like, do you feel like, you know, your tribe feels like there's too many people in it? There are too many noxious items that are not interacting well with one another. Like Nicole said, are they causing permanent fractures in your stomach, which I guess are ulcers? Expunge them like Probiflora, flush them out like you flush Meryl's idol, and you'll end up with a happier tribal stomach at the end of the day.
If they don't make an ad working with the pun of flushing idols with also Probiflora, like, they're doing it wrong. Maybe we should work for Probiflora and we should make bathroom puns that are Survivor related. Is this the perfect job for us, Mike?
I think so. That's where my sweet little doo-doo can come in a very different way, shape, or form. I'm so happy, Shannon, though, because after last week, we finally figured out what Probiflora was. I think we were very like, okay, is this like something to do with flowers? But no, it does seem like something that might help move the bowels along, so to speak.
Yeah. And it had pop-ups in this episode?
Maybe they might need a new voiceover artist. So Probiflora, if you're listening, I'm here. Okay.
We'll write the ads and Palesa will say them. It'll be honestly amazing content for them. We will do this for free. have just offered for us to do it for free. So,
but I did, to your point, I did like the pop up that came up. I think it was, was when they were at the well and like Nicole was crying about getting rid of Nathan,
feeling it's just uncomfortable.
Like, just like Nicole got rid of Nathan from her system, so you can too with Proby Flora.
All right, so the script, I feel like you could read it perfectly, Palesa. I mean, it won't be a very glamorous thing to say. Like, it'll be a lot of bathroom humor, but I do think it's going to be like, do you want to send some content of your stomach down the tribal council pathway? Proby Flora, you know? But with Palesa, we'll say it, so it'll sound good.
Proby Flora, get rid of anyone you want to get rid of.
In your stomach, with your fist. Anyway, Proby Flora are still not mentioned by any of the sponsors on social media, so their integration into the sponsor world continues to be a struggle. I don't have a quiz, but I do have the best sponsor tweets of the week for the sponsors tweeting about Survivor South Africa. So first off, Biostress quote-tweeted a tweet asking for 5 favorite players from the season. They said, this is an easy one. Our top 5 is definitely 1, focus, 2, energy, 3, recovery, 4, immune support, and 5, stamina. It's like, did they even understand the question? None of those are players on the season, Biostress. Like, that's not what was being asked of you.
I'm not sure. Now that we finally get to talk with another Survivor South African contestant, Palesa, what are your personal feelings towards Biostrath, both and on the island and off, considering the relationship you have with it and the fact that it is just still such a mystery to us?
Well, I can say that I don't really have much of a relationship with it because I never won any challenges. I never won any challenges by Biostrath. Honestly, I would have loved to have some Biostrath during when I was on the island because, I mean, I'm South African and Biostrath is a well-known brand in South Africa, and we know that they're there for energy and, you know, for sort of different types of energies in the day. So like long going energy, for example, if you're going to work or to, and they have also sort of like short time energies for when you go to gym and that kind of thing, or when you're studying. So we know about Biostrath. If you're in South Africa, you know what Biostrath is and what it's used for. But I mean, product placement is product placement, and everybody has to make their money. And I'm actually quite grateful because without those sponsors, I don't think I'd be in an island and I would have as much as I'd have right now. So maybe Biostrath is listening right now. I actually need a gym sponsorship because it's winter in South Africa and I haven't been going to the gym and I think I need to now. So Biostrath, if you're listening, help me out.
If you go back, when you go back for an all-star season, would you rather win Biostrath or Proby Flora as a reward?
Oh, wait, did you say when? Did you say when, not if?
Yeah, when.
Okay, yeah. I'm good. I'm good with when and not if because I definitely want to go back to the island. But because I'm not really sure what Proby Flora is, I'll go with Biostrath.
I'll do mystery. I love it. It expels things from your stomach. I feel like we're really getting a handle on it. I'm so grateful for the sponsors. I love that they got another sponsor mid-season with Proby Flora. Like, it's clearly obviously working. I'm so happy about that. To continue on with the tweets, Biostrath also said, we'll pass on the spit shake, Sipe. The only shake we'd like is from Steers. And I feel like it's not good marketing to try and conflate the Steers shakes with a spit shake.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you piss off people, they might spit in your Steers shake.
Yeah, that's what they should start calling. Steers, if they wanted to do really integrated marketing, should do the spit shake. We'll see if Survivor fans go and order that from Steers.
Yeah, nobody wants to order a spit shake, I'm pretty sure. But what I'm happy about that last season, they did do a queen burger because they have a regular king Steers burger. And after me, they had a queen Steers burger, which I was really proud
that's
of.
Amazing.
I took a lot of pride from that. But other than that, spit shake, not a great idea because I don't think anybody wants to drink that, including myself. And I love Steers burgers, so no.
I honestly, Palesa, would die happy knowing that I had a hamburger named after me. That is just like something you could put on your epitaph on your gravestone and have everyone remark about it.
Absolutely. Here lies Palesa with a burger named after her.
Well, that's a really good legacy. And speaking of Steers, they tweeted, so I said last week they were like Rupert tweets, right? And this week it was still kind of Rupert tweety, but my God, this one tweet was so shady. They said, Jacques is showing off his ribs and it's not the kind we like. By the way, this came with an image of Jacques' ribs. It says, the survivor diet has definitely taken its toll and someone desperately needs some flame grilled. Like, man, lay off. Like, you know, you already have Cape Union Mark tweeting way too much about Jacques. Like, can you lay off him?
Listen, he didn't have any, like, his edit was essentially like skin and bones this episode. Why not his actual chest as well?
Well, he told you last week that he was going to do that. Like, he said, you're not going to hear from me next week. I'm purple. Like, again, that's how you know someone's so important, when, like, they get to tell you that they're going to be having a quiet week. Speaking of quiet, you know that I love when the sponsors tweet into the abyss and no one engages with it. Mahindra tweeted, "A heated tribal council tonight. Do you think you should play a more physical or social game?" One person responded with a thumbs up, and that was the engagement on the tweet.
Well, can I speak about something that's a bit more engaging? Because now Mnet has come back again with their compilations of community tweets that are much, much shadier. Maybe not on the level of the rib steers controversy, but definitely very, very shady by comparison.
Yes, give us the shadiest tweets.
All right, let's read some out here. RJ Prinsloo says, "Can someone please check if Nate got hurt there being dragged?" Emoji of nails being painted. There's a lot of like cracks about Nate getting injured in every single challenge. Let's see. JW Herder, "Nicole might be the beauty queen, but Nathan wears the drama crown." Let's see. Bruce Lely, this isn't shady, but I'm a little scared for Bruce Lely, said in all caps, "Can I please be hugged with your fist, Dante?" Emoji of hearts and eyes, emoji of fire.
Yeah, I'm putting out the call right now.
Hugged with the fist.
Can we please have the Dante's Fist Twitter account? Like, that would be the best of the body parts, because I'm obsessed with this.
Yeah, it has to be like the Arthur meme of like his fist close up. Like, we need to do the same thing with Dante at one point. Exactly. Let's make it happen, people.
I know there's already a Nathan's Hair Twitter account, which follows
me. Yeah, we
both
that.
Fact. Okay. So like,
we birthed Nathan's foot and Nathan's hair, which are both out of the game, but certainly not forgotten.
And now what about Nathan's hand? You see the amount of injuries Nathan has been having. By the time you're done with the season, you'll have Nathan's everything. Like Nathan's hand, Nathan's foot, Nathan's hair, Nathan's wrist, Nathan's toe, Nathan's finger. Because I'm pretty sure he's coming up for more. Nathan, come on, stop. Yeah. Stop, please.
So I my award for the shadiest tweet of the week here goes to Hilgard V. Hoistin, who sent out two shady things. First, he said, "Well, after having taken Nathan's half idol, Nicole quickly discarded her used dishcloth. Hashtag thank you next." So Nathan called Nathan a used dishcloth. And that one's pretty bad. Let's see. Dr. Oscar said, "The face you make when they tell you you passed an exam which you never qualified for." And it's a shot of Durao and Dante and Meryl reacting to the blind side, which is Meryl and Dante both with their brows furrowed and Durao just looking off into space. So I can't tell who Dr. Oscar is talking to, but I really do appreciate it. Monique Mortlock said, "Whenever Nicole makes a speech and it's a gif of someone really half-heartedly sarcastically clapping slowly." And I don't know if it's a response to Monique or just in general. Nicole tweeted an emoji of a snake, hashtag Team Slytherin, ooh, Survivor essay, and it's a picture of her posing with a gun.
What?
Yeah, she has a beauty career. I'm assuming a modeling career comes part and parcel. But yeah, I think it's her sort of literally her aiming at the haters. But yeah, it's a picture of her posing with a gun, essentially calling herself a Slytherin as well. So.
We don't even have those kinds of liberal gun laws in South Africa, so I don't know.
Okay, yeah, that's very surprising.
Pot laws, like, I don't know if Nicole is to guns what Tanya is to pot, but it sort of took me out of nowhere here. But I always think it's fun when contestants sort of like clap back at the contestants who are or the people who are sort of shadily tweeting them. So I'm excited to hear some more from Nicole later on. And see what other photos she has to bring up out of her portfolio.
I'm not, because we shaded her for this entire 2-hour podcast and called her the doof of the week. Now I take it back. I take it all back. Every single thing I said. She gets all the chizzy points. She wins the chizzy. The chizzy is over. The podcast is over. Good night. Thank you very much.
when the season is on the air and the castaways are watching and all that, it is the hardest time for all castaways to actually watch the tweets go by and see what people have to say about you, because this is really it's even after you're on the island, it's really a psychologically and very emotionally traumatizing experience for you to be on Survivor. And you know, the tweets either make it better or they make it worse, and more often it's worse than not. So I this is just my part to say I'm sending so much love to all the castaways, because I know where you are right now and it's not going to be easy for you, but you just have to, like, you know, you just have to take your butter the same way that you take a lemon, you know?
May you all have burgers dedicated to you. That is our wish for you.
Right.
I did love Rob's fact checker said, it's nowhere near Stephanie shouting out Gigi's Pizza, but I love how Dante, the coffee shop owner, promoted his own industry to tribal council by saying, if a social game is your only way of coming into the game, then maybe move yourself to a coffee shop and be social with friends. And I need this to be the next sponsor. Like, we talked about how the sponsors are building up. Dante's coffee shop, titled With My Fist, would be an amazing sponsor to pop up during Survivor South Africa.
Yep. Like a fistful of coffee would be the name of his shop. But I mean,
we're so good at this.
but was it positive advertising though? Because he was saying in a negative way, like, Jeff, you're not good for this game. Go to a coffee shop. Like, I feel like he's saying, like, come to a coffee shop if you're a big old social nerd like Jeff.
Stupid coffee shop. He was just trying to win one client. Jeff. Just like, Jeff, you know, you have a place in my coffee shop when this is all said and done. It was actually a kind offer. So people, I think, are misreading what Dante was putting out this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, everybody, I think so many people now going forward into Merge have had their fair experience of both the positive and the negative. So it's time for people to really start realizing that it's not really about how people perceive you, but it's really just about playing the game now. And that's something that I've always been excited to watch. And I just really want to see people playing the game. And for me, the people like Maba, I want her to start being like really active in the gameplay and not just like, you know, docile and behind other people. And as well as, you know, all the other contestants who've been sort of behind other castaways playing, when Merge comes, it's time for your own game. It's time for you to reveal yourself. And there's no more coffee shop time. It's time for you to actually step out into the light and be your own person.
Well, I do have a couple of questions, even though we've talked so much about this episode. There's a couple of loose ends. John Johnson asks, what's the chances Doral loses his idol? But I'm going to put an amendment to that and ask, how will he lose it? What are the creative ways he can come up with for how Doral loses this poor fake idol?
I know that certain bathroom functions with probiflora are taken by sometimes digging a hole in the middle of the jungle. I honestly would not be surprised if it falls out of Darao's pocket, lands in there, and gets buried along with some not so nice things.
Didn't you say last time you thought it was during an aquadome? So you feel like just like every time Darao needs to go to the bathroom, an idol is lost to the world.
Yeah, exactly. So Doral, don't take any probiflora if you want to hold on to that idol.
I'm worried about the environment. Like, I feel like at the point, the ocean could just be littered with Doral's fake idols. You know, we have to think about what we're putting out into the environment as well.
I agree. But I think I'm going with a bit more practical way in which Doral loses his idol. He's probably just going to tell someone about it, and then that person's going to tell everyone that it's fake and it's not real, and he won't be able to use it in any sort of creative way.
A moral loss, yes. Felipe Shimon wants to ask you, Palesa, who will rock the coolest lipstick should they be on the jury? Because we know that was something that you were so good at last season, but I want to add to that and say, who will rock jury fashion and beauty in general, do you think, from this tribe?
I'm going to go with Nicole rocking the best fashion and beauty. Of course, I'm not there, so it would be me.
But I'm a little afraid as to what Nicole might bring to the jury bench considering the photo we just saw of her.
Right, but on this one, I'm definitely going with Nicole. If she does, actually, when she does, and this is me sort of, you know, preempting it, when she does land up on the jury, I think she'll definitely rock the best outfits and makeup looks.
And the last question, Barbecue Ice on Twitter basically asked us when we would like the jury to start and if we want jury removal like you had obviously on your season, Palesa, because we're obviously going to a 13-person merge. With the way that there's so many episodes, it'll probably be a final two. For me, I don't want jury removal. I don't want an 11-person jury. I don't love the big jury. Smaller is better for me. So I'd be happy for them to start it in a couple of episodes from now and not right at the merge. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I can only imagine, Palesa, just all the anxiety that might have brought once Nico brought up that one of the jurors would be removed. And I've never been a huge fan of that twist, even though I've always loved the seasons, ironically enough, that have utilized that twist. I know that you and I, Shannon, did a little bit of internet sleuthing with the help of Survivor community a couple of weeks ago, that we saw 9 juror stools at Tribal Council. So maybe either there's a few possibilities here. We could, you know, vote somebody out next week who doesn't make the jury, and then we do a final three with a 9-person jury. We can do a final three with initially a 10-person jury, but one person gets removed. I know that I would much rather have a final, you know, final two than a final three any day. But I also feel a little weird about like people making the merge and then us going two votes without someone going to the jury. Maybe it's just because I love this cast so much, but I would like to see, you know, a good amount of people make the jury. So I think right now, if I had to put in a prediction, it would be the person who goes at 13 is not going to be on the jury. And then we have 9 jury members with a final three in the finale.
I would be okay with 2 people not making the jury who make the merge. That's something we saw, the exact same structure with a final 2, final 13 merge, and then final 11, the jury starts. That was the Australian Survivor season 1 format, and I think that's perfectly fine.
But then we missed poor Connor.
Yeah, I know. Shame for Connor, but it worked for the game. So Nick made it. That's all I care about.
No, I think that's great too. I would definitely love to see a little bit of a twist, and it's good to see different, especially if you have a season coming after another, for them not to be doing the same thing. So I'd love to watch a final 2 rather than a final 3. And I mean, a final 3 makes it so much difficult for the jury to make their decision on who to vote for. And a final 2, obviously, I mean, it's either one of the 2, and you don't really have that much to worry about when it comes to that, which makes, I mean, the game a little bit more direct and the jurors vote a lot more direct. But I mean, either way, whatever the final, whether it's final 2 or final 3, I hope that it's going to be not really a shock to us, but it's going to be a good surprise. And most of us will be happy with that decision. And those who aren't happy with that decision are still happy for the fact that it was good to look at and it was good to watch. And I think that's the best thing for me. I mean, I think even if you come up with an outcome that was beneficial or that you'd like to see, if it's not great TV and it's not great to watch, it's still kind of meh, you know. So hopefully it's still great to watch, whether it's final 2 or final 3. And hopefully there's no juror vote off, because I think anyone that makes it to the jury deserves to be in the jury, and they shouldn't be voted off the jury.
Yeah, what I've said before is with this twist, I feel like with this twist, it makes it feel like the game is still happening when you're on the jury, which doesn't feel particularly right. And yeah, I totally agree that one of the things I do love about Final 2s, I mean, no offense to Annalise whatsoever, but I mean, that John Tom final 2 was so much fun to watch last season, especially knowing the journeys that the two of them went on. So I'm really hoping it's a final 2. We'll see. Survivor South Africa Island of Secrets has a lot of game in front of it. We're only reaching the halfway point next week, so there might be even more twists and turns up their sleeves that we can't even expect at this point.
Yeah. Well, when it's Survivor South Africa, you know it'll be good TV. Like, honestly, what they've been able to do in the last, you know, season and a half that we've watched is incredible to me. I have such a good time every week. And we've really broken it down this week. We've spoken at length about everything in this episode. What is the hashtag for people who got all the way to the end of this podcast? Mine are all fist related. I've got hashtag with my fist. That's simple and elegant. That's a new thing that I'm saying in my daily life. Sorry to everyone who interacts with me. But I also love Mike's suggestion for what Dante's coffee shop should be called, hashtag fistful of coffee. Brilliant marketing.
I think, you know what, we have just created a new little like marketing firm between the three of us, and I don't want to like pat my own back here with my fist, but I think that might be a way to sort of like promote Dante's business a bit and create a unique way to not only embrace his unique style of communication, but also the new social gatherings in the coffee shops.
Yeah, call us, best marketing team around. But next week, I want to announce something so exciting. We have another incredible guest coming to our podcast, and that will be Mnet's favorite international Survivor viewer, and that is Rick Devins, who will be giving his first Survivor recap after coming off the show. I'm extremely honored that we will be the first person he's talking to about a season that is not his own, Mike.
I know this. I'm very, very excited, considering how Rick was so much at the forefront of everything, including a big chaotic merge in his own season, a lot of stuff happening at Tribal Council, a lot of idol related things. I'm sure Rick, even though he has not inherently played Survivor South Africa, he's going to have a lot to speak to, I'm sure. And hopefully, Shannon, you and I can, I know people have been trying to convince him to watch Palesa's season, Philippines, but hopefully by the end, it'll be simultaneously our goal to break down the episode in a great way with Rick while getting him to essentially start Philippines that day as soon as he records.
He has to watch. I mean, it's the most amazing season. Every single time he tweets about this season, which is also incredible,
yes.
He does get a lot of tweets bullying him and being like, but have you watched season six? Like, what are you doing if you haven't watched season six?
I completely agree. What has he been doing if he hasn't watched
season six? I think he was playing Survivor, to be fair. So.
Because I think, I mean, everyone who's watched the season, and you know, I think I'm so, so excited from last season, the fact that from last season, everyone who's been international has been watching, every international Survivor fan has been watching a lot more of Survivor South Africa since last season. And it's really been a catapult effect into the season. And it's been highly recommended. And obviously, when I go to places like Reddit, even on Twitter, and even on Instagram, I think since last season, all my new Instagram followers are Survivor fans, because I don't know these people. They're not from my country. So obviously they're here for one reason. You know what I mean? So definitely, I think it would be great to watch the season and watch season six. I won't ever say it's not a great reason to watch season six, because duh. But I'm so excited to also see, you know, how many other people have a great contribution to say to this new season, and to see how many international castaways and fans are going to be watching this season is amazing. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, to listening to your next podcast and hearing what other former castaways have to say about the season.
We're going from the coffee shop to La Cheeserie next week, which is super exciting.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk to Rick. But Palesa, speaking of social media, where can all of our international and South African listeners find you on social media? And I know you've been recapping the show every week as well, so where can they find that?
Okay, so on social media, I'm very prominent on Twitter and Instagram, which is at Tau Palesa Voice. So that's TauPalesa Voice, VOICE. And of course, I've also been doing, you know, it's great to do some verbal recaps like a podcast, but I'm doing, you know, something that's also got some visual effects. So if you actually want to see, you know, what I look like when I'm speaking about these, you can actually go on YouTube and watch my recaps on Tau Palesa. So just search on YouTube, Palesa Tau Survivor SA. So PalesaTau Survivor SA Season 6, and you'll see what my thoughts are on this current season, which is Season 7. I've been having such a great time, and actually I'm also going to be bringing some new content coming through from this week, which is great, because I'm having some sponsors come on board. And ooh, you know, we also love to speak about things and make money at the same time, which is amazing.
We love the sponsors. We're always here for sponsor talk. Well,
we're always here for sponsors.
Yeah, so if you want to see me talk about sponsors a lot and also the show, you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Shannon Gates. You can follow Mike on Twitter and on Instagram at A Mike Bloomtype. And Mike, what do you have going on at the moment in your podcast world?
The Instagram plug's so interesting. I only post like occasionally pictures of my son, and that's like all my Instagram feed is.
He's so cute.
Thank you, Jeff. Looking at you. But basically, I have taken a dive into the Upside Down. Josh Wegler and I have started to record podcasts about the third season of Stranger Things, which launched at the end of last week. We recorded two episodes so far, and three more should be coming your way this week on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Make sure to subscribe to post-show recaps for all that. That was a lot of fun. I can't wait to see people's reactions to that and the season in general. I'm doing some Big Brother stuff as well for Parade.com. They had a big twist this past week on Big Brother, which some people are comparing to Edge of Extinction. I think it's a little different than Edge of Extinction, personally. No offense to next week's guest, but I got to talk with the Big Brother EPs about that, which was sort of like a bucket list item for the reality TV nerd in me. So yeah, lots of fun stuff going on, both on Twitter and apparently on Instagram, too.
Yeah, well, this has been so much fun. Palesa, thank you for coming on to talk about a huge episode. I hope we did it justice with our analysis of it. A lot of talk about this episode, but it was so much fun having you on.
It was also quite a pleasure to be here, and I'm really, really happy that you guys invited me to your podcast. And look, I'm always happy to be on the Rap podcast, because obviously it's very well known internationally, and you guys are great. Shannon, love you. Mike, love you too. And it's always great to have a chat with you guys.
That means so much, coming from a queen who had a burger named after her. Palesa, you're a legend. It was our honor to have you on RHAP, so thank you for that. Thank you to you as always, Mike, as well. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to you guys for listening, and we will see you guys with Rick Devens himself next week. Bye.